Get ready for the show. Steve's on vacation right now, so Chris Brown joins us live in studio. Chris will be on the field for today's minicamp session, the final minicamp session of the year. Plus, at 1 o'clock, Armando Salguero will join us from Miami to talk about the Dolphins and their organized team activity and their minicamp. And at 2 o'clock, head coach Sean McDermott scheduled to join us along with Lorenzo Alexander. We got a big show coming up. Stick around. One Bills Live is coming up. That's right, Steve is on vacation. Welcome to the show. John Murphy here in our One Buffalo studio, and welcome to One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Steve's going to be off for a little bit. We get into the funny time of the year now. The final day of minicamp today. Bills players scatter after today. In fact, don't be in the way about 3:15 today because you might get run over. A lot of players headed for the exits here at 3 o'clock after practice ends. But we got a show here today. We got a show here tomorrow as well. Steve's off. He'll be back on June 25th, I believe, the Monday, and I'll be gone then. And just bear with us over the next few weeks because we got a lot of vacations we're working through here. In the meantime, Chris Brown, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, is going to join us. He's going to be on the field with us live from training camp in just a minute or two, from minicamp, rather, as the final minicamp session is about ready to start. Should be starting any second now. Chris Brown will be there. Chris Brown will be here in studio. 1 o'clock today, we're going to talk about the Dolphins with Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. He is one of their longtime beat writers and observers. Armando Salguero will clue us in on what's going on in Miami, the culture change with the Dolphins that they've made a big deal about this year. How's Tannehill look and his rehab, that sort of thing. That's coming up at 1. 2 o'clock, busy hour. We expect we're going to get a surprise visit from head coach Sean McDermott coming up in the 2 o'clock hour when they come off the practice field. Just sort of a recap of what went on here over the last 3 days and the last 6-8 weeks with OTAs and minicamp. And also Lorenzo Alexander scheduled for a visit with us coming up in the 2 o'clock hour as well as we talk to Zoe about minicamp and about the upcoming training camp. So that's the schedule for today. A lot of Bills talk today, a lot of stuff to talk about. You know by now that from today, 6 weeks from today, is the official start of training camp. The schedule came out yesterday, Thursday, July 26th, 5:30 practice, ticket required for the first training camp for the Bills, first training camp practice, 18th season of St. John Fisher College. And that starts about, I think it's 13 total practices at St. John Fisher. I'm sorry, 12 at St. John Fisher and one here in Orchard Park at New Era Field on August 3rd, Friday night practice on August 3rd. So it's about 12 practices at Fisher over just about a 3-week span. We'll be there with the show for about 8 or 10 days over that time period, and that's coming up sooner than you think. Get ready for that. Bills training camp, the schedule came out yesterday. Thursday, July 26th, that's 6 weeks from today, first practice at training camp. They're there the next day at 2:15 in the afternoon, no ticket required. A couple of weekend practices, a couple of days off as far as open public practices. Two more practices at Fisher, the 1st and 2nd of August, and then the New Era Field practice on Friday, August 3rd. And then a Saturday off, a Sunday practice on August 5th, and then August 7th, 2 days later. And then preseason game, Carolina here at Buffalo on August 9th. Three more practices after the first preseason game number one. Schedule's available at BuffaloBills.com, so go there and make your plans. There's some theme days coming up. Steve and I talked about them yesterday. Theme days for the Bills at training camp to kind of make it a little more fun for the fans. So all of that is available at our website, BuffaloBills.com. Sean McDermott met with the media a moment or two ago. We'll hear some of his comments. We'll hear him before he comes on the air with us. Not much new today. Strong attendance throughout this minicamp. In fact, I believe yesterday they had just about everybody, at least on the field, not everybody engaged because of some injuries, but everybody on the field. After today, 6 weeks off, he was asked today about Zay Jones. He said no change in Zay Jones' status, still in the rehab process after knee surgery a couple of weeks ago. According to McDermott, Jones is attacking it aggressively. He says it'll be critical from now till the start of training camp for Zay to recover, but no reason to believe that he won't be ready for training camp. Other than that, McDermott asked about Josh Allen, says he likes what he's seen, likes his poise, the way he gets in and out of the huddle so far. A lot of talk about Calvin Benjamin. McDermott believes that Benjamin looks to be a big contributor to the offense. And he talked a little bit about the the monitoring the off-season period for players, what they do, how they work out, et cetera, during the 6 weeks that come up. In the meantime, there is one more practice, and it is just getting started out on the grass practice field on a beautiful Thursday afternoon in Archer Park. And our man Chris Brown, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, is standing by outside as the Bills take the field for practice. Chris, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Doing okay. Another great day out here. There is a little bit of a stiff breeze, kind of like there was yesterday, about 10 to 15 miles an hour. So I know Josh Allen had no problem throwing into that here yesterday. We'll see if they run team segments into the wind for the offense again today.
I wonder, has anybody asked Josh Allen, the rookie, or even A.J. McCarron, who hasn't played here before, are they unaccustomed to facing that kind of a breeze that you get every day, essentially every day here in Orchard Park? They'll get it once the fall practices start here in Orchard Park, you know, late August and September. It'll be breezy every day. Does that throw those guys off at all, do you think? Has anybody said anything about that?
Nobody's really asked them about it. I do know that Josh is very experienced playing in wind. I mean, playing in Laramie at the University of Wyoming. They're playing at elevation out there, but it's pretty flat around the Wyoming campus. And talking to his head coach out there, he said it's probably windier there on a more consistent basis than it is here in Buffalo. So I think if anybody's been exposed to it, it's been Josh Allen over the past few years at Wyoming. AJ probably not to the same degree, but again, we haven't asked him his level of experience in windy conditions.
Chris Brown, Bills insider, BuffaloBills.com, on the field as the Bills stretch and get ready for today's practice. Coach McDermott was asked a lot today about Kelvin Benjamin and how he has looked so far, Chris, in these mini camps. What have you seen from him? Is he fully recovered from the surgery he went through, and is he essentially ready to be the number one target in the passing game? That's what it looks like he'll be.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. You know, in the couple of times I've talked to him over the course of the spring, he said he feels good. His knees are both good. You know, had the torn lateral meniscus on the one knee, obviously the surgical ACL repair on the other a couple of years ago. You know, he said he just, you know, he's playing on one leg late last year for this team. But he said, now I can bend. You know, all my joints work. I can bend well, which, you know, is important for a tall player. You got to be able to bend a little bit to improve your catch radius all the more, even though he's got a big one to begin with. And he's turned some heads in the last couple of days with some of the catches he's made. I mean, Josh Allen threw him a laser on Tuesday, and he went up the ladder to go get that thing, and he's probably the only guy on the field that's catching that ball, maybe with the possible exception of Andre Holmes, who has a big catch radius as well. And I think he's ready to step into that number one role. I know he told the Associated Press in an interview yesterday that, you know, the way he exited Carolina, it was something that he wanted. He said he wanted out of Carolina, which was kind of newsworthy because we didn't hear that when he first came to the Bills via trade last year. So it's interesting that he was looking for a new set of surroundings for himself, maybe perhaps because he didn't feel like he could take his game to the next level in the offense in Carolina. He'll have the opportunity, unquestionably, to do that here, because aside from him, Jeremy Curley is really the only other proven receiver at the NFL level in this wide receiving core.
One of the things about Kelvin Benjamin, it strikes me, Chris, is there's really nobody or very few people in the NFL playing his position like him. You know what I'm saying? He's so big and so wide, and McDermott talked about him today as a matchup problem. He is. And if he becomes the Bills' number one receiver, which I think most people anticipate he will be, it'll be a matchup issue, and teams won't face any other people like Kelvin Benjamin the rest of the season. He's just different, mostly because of his size. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think what a lot of opposing defenses will do is we'll say, how do we defend those bigger tight ends, you know, like a Travis Kelce or a Rob Gronkowski? Maybe we employ the same approach there, although Benjamin in large part is going to be lining up certainly a lot wider in formations out on the boundary more often than not than a tight end might. But I think I would anticipate defensive coordinators would be looking at what worked against bigger tight ends like those two that I mentioned in terms of facing Kelvin Benjamin.
Chris, I wonder what, if you look at the Bills receiving group in general, the whole group, we've talked about them a lot with you and with everybody else, What dimension do you think is missing there? Is there one trait that they just don't have with the group of receivers they have? Or I know there's a lot of unknowns. People, as you mentioned, there's only a couple who've really established themselves in the league. But if you were to add one trait to that receiving core that might be missing now, what would it be?
A more physical receiver. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin can be that because he is so large, but after him, there really isn't anybody that can be open even when they're covered, if you know what I mean. And that's because you don't have a lot of guys there that can muscle DBs and shield them from the ball. You know, you look at Andre Holmes and you say, yes, he's very tall, but he's very slightly, he's got a slight frame. So he doesn't really play to a true 6'5 height. You know, you can look at a young kid like Robert Foster, who's certainly put together well, but I don't know if he's got the experience to know how to face those more physical corners in this league and still find a way to get the separation necessary to make plays. I think there's an element of deep speed here, so I'm not as worried about that than I am as, you know, somebody that can create their own space, so to speak, to make a play when you absolutely have to have it.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, on the field as minicamp continues. Final day of minicamp. The Bills breaking down into individual drills right now. Hey, Chris, let me turn your attention, if I may, to the tight end group. It hasn't changed much since a year ago. Charles Clay, number one on the depth chart. Nick O'Leary, you would think, number two. Logan Thomas, I would guess, number three. Then it's Jason Kroon, Keith Tobridge, and Kari Lee. First of all, of those last three names, any one of them do you see making a big push for a roster spot? Has anybody been a standout at the tight end spot from the three who were not even around last year, the three who were around but not, you know, big roster guys last year?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's really stood out where you say, wow, this guy's really making a run at that third tight end spot. They've all rotated through, and the coaches have been pretty liberal in giving guys first and second team reps, no matter who it is. They've backed off on Charles Clay's reps. I don't think they want to pound him here too much in the spring. There's really no sense to, provided he knows the offense well enough, and that seems to be the case. You know, Jason Kroon and Kari Lee have been rotated through with the ones and twos a little bit more than Keith Tobridge, who was on the practice squad at the beginning of the year last year and then had an injury and was put on injured reserve. Kroon was on the practice squad all last year as well, and then Lee, as you know, got some time up on the 53-man roster last year. It's really a mixed bag of guys, and you got to believe that the coaching staff is hoping that someone separates, but to this point, I have not seen that.
Well, let me get you to the more regular guys, last year's tight ends, and let me ask you about Nick O'Leary. Do you think we've seen the best that Nick O'Leary has to offer, or is there any sign that there's another level for him, maybe something that he's ready to tap into this year?
I think he kind of is what he is.
Yeah.
You know, he's an average blocker, can help you in the short to intermediate passing game. And so I suppose you could say, well, let's see maybe if they can get an uptick in his play just by virtue of the new scheme. But this is a scheme that I think in large part is going to try to spread the field to get their playmakers in space. He's not a space player. You know, he's a short to intermediate area player. And so I don't know if the scheme is going to enhance his skill set, so to speak.
Yeah. All right, let me take you to another position group. Chris Brown joining us from the practice field. Running backs, we know Shady. We know of Shady. We know what he can do. We know what he's done. Chris Ivory brought in this year as a free agent. What have you seen from him? How ready is he to be the guy who gets the reps that Shady doesn't get as the number two running back? And what does he provide the Buffalo Bills, Chris Ivory?
Well, he's a power guy, north-south runner, as I think most people know. I think there's one area where he is underrated, and I would say that is in the receiving game. He's a better pass receiver than I think he's given credit for. I think it's just a byproduct of him not being asked to do that with the teams he's been with previously, like the Jets and the Jaguars. He's been asked to be a power runner there, and, you know, he can certainly fill that role here as well, short yardage, maybe down by the goal line, get the tough yards. But I think if opposing defenses see him on the field and say, well, he's not going to be a target in the passing game, I think that's a misguided approach, because I think there's enough confidence here that if they need to go to him on a swing route or even a circle route, that he's a guy that can accomplish that as well. So I see him serving as the primary complementary piece to McCoy, with Cadet not that far behind either. I was very impressed with what Travaris Cadet did for this team last year before he fractured his ankle in week 16 at New England. I think his overall skill set is the most like LeSean McCoy. Not saying he is LeSean McCoy, but the things he does well are very similar in nature to what McCoy does well from a skill set perspective.
What do you think works best, an offset, a changeup to McCoy, and that would be Ivory, or maybe somebody a little bit like Shady McCoy, meaning Travaris Cadet? What do you think works best for this team and maybe teams in general?
Well, I would tend to think it's Cadet, only because of the reasons I just mentioned. And what's been very clear to me in the way this offense has lined up in the team segments, they're going to be getting these running backs out in space. A lot of times they're lining up wide in receiver positions. And I think it's because Coach Dable realizes, look, I don't have a lot of proven weapons at the wide receiver position. I'm going to get some of my best playmakers in the passing game from the running back position out in space, because they can win out there. So players like McCoy and Cadet have been split wide quite often in a lot of the offensive series here through the course of OTAs and minicamp, and I expect that to continue. So I would say Cadet, but I guess until we get to week one, it remains to be seen.
What about the rest of that running back group, Chris? I've seen Tywan Jones get some return work a little bit through this spring. There's Tywan Jones. There's Marcus Murphy, got a little playing time last year. There's the rookie Keith Ford. Anybody there ready to challenge for a roster spot, do you think, as the team comes back to training camp in 6 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think Marcus Murphy did a lot of nice things toward the end of last year when he got an opportunity. You know, he's not as big a guy. He's kind of more of a scat back. So I think potentially there could be a role for him there. Obviously, Tywan Jones has to light it up on special teams, I think, to stick on this roster, because I think Ivory and Cadet are firmly ahead of him on the depth chart, you know, along with McCoy. So that's three right there. You're keeping Pat DeMarco as your primary fullback. That's four. So, you know, there's probably just one spot left there for a guy that can probably do some stuff on special teams, you know, and help you there additionally. So I think it becomes Tywan Jones and Marcus Murphy who are chiefly battling for that last spot, assuming they carry five.
Got Chris Brown on the field for us as we sort of take stock of the Buffalo Bills roster on this final day of the mini camp, the mandatory mini camp. They're 6 weeks away from training camp. I want to turn your attention, if I can, Chris. We only got a few minutes left, I'm certain. Turn your attention to the defensive side of the ball and the linebacker position. McDermott talked a little bit about second-year linebacker Matt Milano, still sidelined with a hamstring. He doesn't want to push him now. He wants to make sure the hamstring is ready to go. In his stead, who's getting the reps there, and who's benefiting from extra playing time now with Matt Milano on the sidelines with his hamstring pull?
So it's chiefly been Ramon Humber. You know, those two were battling it out for a starting role last year. Humber got it early in the year, and then Milano took it over second half of the year, as we all know. It looks like, you know, as you said, Milano is going to probably be the starter on the strong side there going into this year. But, yes, plagued by the hamstring injury. So Humber has been there a good deal. I did notice yesterday, though, that Deion Lacy was getting sprinkled in a little bit on the strong side, which is a change for him because he's largely been Lorenzo Alexander's backup on the weak side. That was a little bit of an interesting thing to notice. It'd be interesting to see if that continues. They're clearly seeing if he's capable of handling that role, switching. Can he handle it mentally, execute, all of those things. But those are the two guys that primarily have been lining up in Milano's spot the last few days.
I want to ask you about another second-year guy, Tanner Vallejo from Boise State. Draft pick a year ago, played a little bit last year. Does he look like he's slated for a backup spot at the Mike linebacker? Is that where he's lining up these days?
Yeah, he's been primarily the second team middle linebacker. They're even giving him reps with the third team. It's almost as if, Murph, they're saying, let's get this kid as many reps as possible so he's as ready as he can be for this position. You know, he doesn't have the typical build of a middle linebacker, but he can run. And as we know, in Coach McDermott's defense, they need linebackers that can cover a lot of ground. And, you know, in a league where your defenses 65% of the time are in nickel, having a middle linebacker that can cover ground like that is not a terrible thing. You know, the alternative to that is you say, well, if you got a heavy run team and he's in your lineup, they're going to target him as best they can and run right at him and say, let's see if you can stop our 225-pound back when you're only 230 pounds yourself. You know, and then you have Julian Stanford, yeah, who also factors into the Mike linebacker stuff. He's put together a little bit better than Tanner Vallejo, and I've seen him move out here. He can move, and he can cover. I don't know to quite the degree that maybe Vallejo can, especially in reverse, but he is a violent tackler, and that gets you points at the Mike linebacker position. So there could be a competition budding there at some point because Stanford does have more time on the job than Tanner Vallejo has, more regular season game experience on the defensive side of the ball when he filled in for some injured players for the Jets last year. So hopefully that is, in fact, the case.
I was going to ask you about Julian Stanford. We had him on the show last week. He's made his mark in the league primarily on special teams, I think, although, as you point out, and he did talk about it with us last week, he did get defensive reps with the Jets. Neither one of them, Vallejo or Stanford, are great size, Chris, which is concerning, I think, a little bit.
You know, did.
You're not going to get a big guy in there if something should happen to the rookie number 49. His backups, Edmonds' backups, are both a little undersized.
Phone dropped out.
Okay. Chris's phone dropped out. He's back. Are you there, Chris?
Delay. I am back now, though.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for bearing
with us. I am here, yes.
Thank you. The question I raised, and I understand, you know, we're talking about Stanford. We talked about Tanner Vallejo. Neither one of them has great size. And that might be what the Bills are forced to deal with as the backup Mike linebacker, right? One of those two, even without the kind of stature that you'd love to see for a Mike linebacker, a big run-stuffing guy.
Right, but I don't know if that's what you want in this defense. I don't think you want a middle linebacker much more than 230 pounds, you know, unless they're a complete athletic freak like Tremaine Edmonds,
right?
which is the case there. I mean, Stanford probably goes about 225, and he's about 6'1", 6'2", so that's not terrible in this kind of a defense. So it's all about the ground you can cover at the linebacker position in this defense. I think that's a big reason why a guy like Preston Brown was not brought back into the fold. Yes, he was a productive player, but he was an average coverage player. And I think that was where the Bills, you know, the front office and the coaching staff said, look, we've got to do better from a coverage standpoint at this position. And I think that's why they felt comfortable moving on from Preston Brown this offseason.
I'm going to cut you loose here in a second, Chris, but just one last thing. I realize that we've talked here for about 15 minutes, and all we've talked about are really potential backups. Does that indicate to you that maybe we don't have to worry about the starters? Because I don't know if I'm there yet, but all we're talking about here are potential backups.
Right. I mean, I think you know, and we discussed this a little bit yesterday, but, you know, the primary position battles are going to be at center.
Right.
And nickel corner, and a lot of people consider nickel corner a starting position just by virtue of the fact as
sure
how much they're on the field. So those are really the two primary competition positions outside of quarterback here. And as we know, quarterback is going to dominate the headlines in training camp every single day. But nickel corner is a real competition between Phillip Gaines and Taron Johnson. You know, and then we know the center competition between Ryan Groy and Russell Bodine. So, you know, those are really, though, the only ones. And then you can call a starting role being that number two receiver spot. But
right.
I think for all intents and purposes, that's going to be Jeremy Curley. So now you're down to the number three receiver role, you know, and you're talking people like Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, players like that. And yeah, but yes, after that, it's largely fighting for those second team backup roles on offense and defense.
I got to ask you about that receiver thing. You're coming in. We can follow up with questions in here, correct, Chris?
Yes, I will be in.
Okay, thank you. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, out on the field. Day three of Bills minicamp is ongoing right now. And let me apologize. You heard it, how long it took for Chris to respond to my question. That is a total technical thing. That is a delay. Chris literally is, what, a couple hundred yards away, maybe 300 or 400 yards away. But the signal, my voice that he can hear, is going up and coming down. Sorry about that. Sound a little awkward, but I think we kind of powered through it. Thanks for bearing with us. All right. Hey, on Twitter today, we want to talk a little bit about where the Bills are. It is the final day of minicamp. Where they are also includes, you know, what they've lost from last year. We want you to think a little bit about who was here last year, what the roster looked like it's setting up for this year. On Twitter, our poll today, who is the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills? And we want to reach it this way because you wonder, part of the answer will be, what do they have to replace him, I think. So think about that, not just who they lost, but what's in place now to replace who they've lost. Who is the biggest offseason loss for the Bills? We'll take your phone calls on this, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 if you're outside Buffalo. We offered a couple of suggestions. The biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills on our Twitter poll, is it the offensive line? Starting center Eric Wood, starting guard Richie Incognito. That's an entry. We put them together. Is it Tyrod Taylor, the quarterback, gone after 3 years? Is it linebacker Preston Brown, the leading tackler in the NFL last year? Somebody else you may have in mind. Who is the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. On Twitter, 88% of you right now say it is Wood and Incognito together. You believe that's the biggest loss the Bills have suffered. That's big. 6% of you think it's quarterback Tyrod Taylor. 4% of you think that it's linebacker Preston Brown. 2% say somebody else. Give us a call. We'd love to discuss that with you. The biggest loss the Bills suffered from last year to this. Right now it looks like you're going to the offensive line. But again, not so much at this point now as we approach training camp 6 weeks away. Not just what they've lost, but who's replacing them. You know, kind of couch your answer in that term and in terms of, you know, do they have an adequate replacement? We got a couple of tweets in already. And as usual, Twitter is the perfect forum for snark. Justin tweets in, this was a terrible Twitter poll, P-O-L-E. Has to be Wood and Incognito. A terrible Twitter poll. And there's one other that got my attention. Johnny Muchard. Tyrod and Preston, ? Ha, 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 ha. Loss. Good. That's what Twitter's for, right? Get the snark out. It's our Twitter poll, P-O-L-L. Who do you think is the biggest loss the Bills have suffered during this from the 2017 season to 2018? And think about how they've been replaced and what you think of that. Lines open. Love to talk to you about it. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter, on our Twitter poll, P-O-L-L, at One Bills Live. Steve is off. He's on vacation. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. Chris Brown headed in here as practice begins. We'll follow up some of our other questions with him. And you're welcome to join us as well on the telephone line. We're just getting rolling. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Chris Brown in studio with us. Steve Tasker on vacation. Thanks to Chris Brown for filling in a little bit. He'll be in and out, wants to keep an eye on practice, got some stuff to write for the website, BuffaloBills.com. He was just on the field out there, and now we get to talk to you. Do me a favor, though, just so I'm used to it. Every time we talk, can you wait 5 seconds before you respond, just so I don't get the delay was eating us up. 1, 2, 3.
I think it took me less time to get here from the field than it did for my sentence to end the last time I answered a question here.
Hey, you said something I just want to clarify about. We were talking about receivers, and we talked about Zay Jones. And today McDermott said that he has no reason to believe, first of all, no reason to believe there's any difference. Zay Jones still recovering, still rehabbing, right, attacking it aggressively, but he still thinks he should be ready for camp, right?
Yes. He said, I don't have any reason. He went double negative on us, which kind of always gives you a little bit of pause. But he said, I don't have any reason not to think that he'll be ready.
Right.
And so then you have to think, all right, let me take the not out of there.
Right,
and
I did
don't
that.
Out of there. Yep. Okay, so he thinks he'll be fine for training camp. You know, he's attacking the rehab. I think Zay really knows that
with the struggles and the hurdles that he tried to clear in his rookie year. This is, in a big way, a redemption year for him, and there's an even greater opportunity to make an impact if he can put it all together, just by virtue of the fact that the roster is wide open at his position. But I think the reason I'm kind of calling Jeremy Curley a number two receiver in this offense is because I think he's going to get the second most playing time after Kelvin Benjamin at the wide receiver position. I think the percentage of plays that he's on the field for the offense is going to be high each and every week, 65% to 75%, if not more. And he's primarily going to be the slot receiver, but I really do foresee that this offense is going to be playing an awful lot of 11 and 12 personnel, which is basically one receiver, one tight end, or one back, one tight end in 11 personnel, and one back and two tight ends in 12 personnel. But there's always going to be two, and more often than not, three receivers on the field in this Brian Daboll offense from what we've seen.
And so you think in terms of playing time and maybe even in terms of targets, catches, Curley would be ahead of Zay Jones? Your guess is Curley would be ahead of James?
Well, I think that's a bigger guess to make, because now you're getting into who's the opponent that week, what are they keying on. I don't know if I can go that far. I just think time on the field-wise, Curley's going to be on the field more. Now, logic would say you're on the field more, you should get more targets because you have more opportunity to win on your routes and be a target for the quarterback. But, again, if they decide, well, hey, we're going to put our second-best corner on Jeremy Curley, well, then the opportunities for targets may not be there. It might be harder to get separation consistently and get open and be a target. But I think time on the field, it's going to be Benjamin 1, Curley 2, and then whoever else wants to seize that number 3 role.
One more question for you about receivers before we move on to our Twitter poll. When you get some time off coming up, at any point during that time off, you're going to think, man, I don't know if they have enough at receiver. Because that thought strikes me sometimes. Now, I don't know if that's enough. I hope so. I'd like to see somebody emerge. I love what Robert Foster's done the last week or so. I'm rooting for Zay Jones to come back big. I know Curley's played in the league. A couple of draft picks. Rod Streeter would be a great story if he can come back. But there's just a lot of question marks after Kelvin Benjamin there.
Right. It's fear of the unknown. I get it, because even Zay Jones is a question mark to a certain extent.
Yeah.
By virtue of, the pitfalls that he fell into as a rookie, with a case of the drops at times, and then having to play hurt the second half of the year with the torn labrum in his shoulder, and now the knee injury. So there's a lot of hurdles that Zay Jones still has to clear just to get on the field. And then, let's be honest, he missed the entire spring in a brand-new offense.
Yeah.
So now he's got that on his plate on top of being physically ready to go. I'm not so much worried about physically being ready to go as I am about processing this offense in the snap of a finger on the field where things happen at lightning quick speed. So there's some ground that Zay Jones is going to have to cover when he comes back in healthy and ready to practice. That's a lot. That's a lot to do.
Sure.
And so I think the opportunity is there for one of these other guys to leapfrog.
But there's questions about all of them. Rod Streeter is a question mark.
Well, Streeter, can he stay healthy?
I think
he's proven, over his time in the league that he is physically gifted enough to play in this league and make plays for an offense. But the question there is, can he stay healthy for a full season and be a contributor for that long? For somebody like Kalen Clay, can you be more than a special teams guy?
Yeah.
Quan Bray has flashed here and there. Malachi Dupree was having a good spring until he pulled his hamstring. Ray-Ray McLeod is one of the most elusive receivers on the roster, but it's clear to me that he still has not mastered this offense. He's getting oftentimes pre-snap. He's getting motion to the other side of the formation by the quarterback because he's lining up wrong.
Yep.
So there's a mental disconnect there for McLeod in the scope of the offense. You want to say, hey, let's see Brandon Riley take that next step. He's got the build at 6'2", 200 pounds. He's sneaky fast. He gets behind defenses at times. But it just seems that stacking days for him is the next hurdle. He knows the offense. He runs good routes. He gets good separation. Now it's got to happen day after day after day. And if he can't do that, they're just going to rotate another guy in and give somebody else a crack. Because that's how this coaching staff operates. You don't show out every single day, somebody else is going to get an opportunity. That's just the way it's been.
Question marks, like I said. Hey, our Twitter poll today, we want to get you in on this, Chris. And we could have asked this question back in February or March, and you should get a different response that you do now. Who is the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills. You can tweet in a response on our Twitter poll or give us a call at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It might be a different answer now because we've had the spring practices, we've had OTAs and minicamp, and you see how they're going to fill some of these holes. So we go back and say, who are they going to miss the most, I guess, is really what this question is. Right now on our Twitter poll, the decisive majority, 88%, says they'll miss the combination of Eric Wood and Richie Incognito. 6% say they'll miss Tyrod Taylor. 4% say Preston Brown. 2% have somebody else in mind. I'm open for any suggestions, but I would have to agree that you know, the questions about offensive line are there because of the departure of Wood and Incognito. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, making it a combination pick kind of makes it a no-brainer.
Yeah.
If I think that, knowing Ryan Groy as well as we do, having seen him play, I'm confident that he can fill the void of Eric Wood on the field. I'm not so sure about the leadership part, but from a performance standpoint, I think he's ready to step into that role. I don't know if he's going to be playing at a Pro Bowl level, because we know that Eric Wood did make the Pro Bowl in 2015, but I think he can capably fill that role. Now, no disrespect to Russell Bodine, I just don't know him as well as a player. So I feel okay at center, no matter who you go with there. It's the left guard spot and the absence of Incognito that is of concern, because Incognito did play at a Pro Bowl level each of the last 3 years that he was here, and now Vlad Dukas looks like he's going to inherit that role. And Dukas just isn't the movement player that Incognito is. He isn't the physical he doesn't play with as much with the same physicality that Richie Incognito plays with. I don't think he's the athlete that can pull and lead a running back up the field like Incognito can. So I just think by virtue of who you've got there right now, you're not going to be able to do the same things that this offense has done in the past.
They may
in
the not
run
want to
game,
do the same things.
And they may not.
Yeah.
And they may not. I don't think they can just because of who they have there. So if they're comfortable putting Vlad Dukas there, that's probably a signal that they're not going to do a lot of the same things and that they just need somebody to hold up in there, not somebody to get out on the move or off to the edge to lead a running back up the field. So it could be a strong indication as to what they're going to be asking their linemen to do, which might be to just stand in there and grind.
Got some tweets from the tweet sheet on this question of the day. Who will the Bills miss the most? From Steve Noble. Says, I feel that Tremaine Edmonds can replace Preston Brown. The quarterback group will exceed Tyrod's production. And with our offensive line additions, we are deeper and much younger. To me, he says, as things stand at wide receiver, Jordan Matthews is the biggest offseason loss. The Patriots stole him. I don't know.
I don't think we got to see enough of Jordan Matthews to know what he really could have been.
I agree.
For this offense.
The whole thing was injuries, right, on his first day, and
right.
Then he got injured later. It's kind of what do we miss from Jordan Matthews? I don't know where he is right now in his career.
Yeah, I think because we never saw what he could really be for this offense. He's a guy that's going to thrive, and I said this in the offseason where I remember you asking me, who do we not expect to be back? And I said, I don't expect Jordan Matthews to be back. Because at that time, you didn't know what the quarterback situation was going to be here. You didn't know what the offense was going to be here. And for Jordan Matthews to reestablish his value in the league, he had to go to a high-volume passing offense. Because what he is a possession receiver, a guy that's going to get you a first down on third and four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy that's going to work in that short to intermediate area and catch 65 to 70 balls for you every season and maybe four or five touchdowns. So where does he go? I said, well, he's probably going to go to New Orleans, New England, Green Bay, somewhere where there's a high passing volume in the attack. And where does he go? He goes to New England and signs a one-year deal. So that makes sense for him, you know, because there's a good chance, if he can stay healthy, that he'll catch 60, 70 balls there. I don't know that you can say he was going to do that here. There certainly would have been opportunity based on the wide receiving core that we just broke down for everybody. And I think because of the fact that he has proven production in the league, and really after Kelvin Benjamin and Jeremy Curley, nobody else on this wide receiver roster does, a person like Steve says, we're going to miss Jordan Matthews. But we're going to have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Let's wait and see what these other receivers have to offer.
He's not similar to Kelvin Benjamin, but his type of work is similar to Kelvin Benjamin. You know what I'm saying? His role would have been very similar to Kelvin Benjamin.
How so?
Just kind of a possession guy, you know, a big target red zone target. I just think he would wind up doing a lot of the things that they're going to want Kelvin Benjamin to do this
year. I just see Kelvin Benjamin as more of a playmaker than Jordan Matthews. I see Jordan Matthews as a complementary receiving target, where I see Kelvin Benjamin as a guy that you can feature your passing game around. It's a much different way of featuring your passing game, but that's a guy that can win in the red zone on any given play. It's a guy that you can go to along the sideline where you can throw it to him and nobody else is catching it but him, and he can also shield defenders from the football. So I think in a very different way, Kelvin Benjamin can be a true number one. I don't think Jordan Matthews has a prayer of ever being that in any kind of offense.
I just think Jordan catches similar passes that Kelvin – you would throw similar passes to Kelvin Benjamin that you would to Jordan Matthews. One more from the tweet sheet, Huggy Bear. As of today, he thinks the biggest offseason loss,
Shaft
he goes,
reference here.
As of today, it's Tyrod Taylor, because right now we don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be for the start of the regular season. Sure, it will sort itself out during training camp, but we are very unproven at the quarterback position. I don't think anybody would argue that.
Can't argue it.
Yeah.
Again, it's – and I sense this from fans, because I'm sure you get this, Murph, just walking around, running into people you know. How's Josh Allen looking? How's Josh Allen looking? I mean, how many times have you heard that four-word sentence?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
It's fear of the unknown. And I get it. I understand why fans are a little nervous, because they're thinking, if Josh Allen's not ready, are we in trouble? Like, what are we going to do? And I think it's just because they don't know what A.J. McCarron is capable of, and they don't know what Nathan Peterman is capable of, and the small body of work has a lot of people down on Nathan Peterman. So they say, well, at least we know Josh Allen is supposed to be good because he's a first-round pick. He's the highest pick we've ever used on a quarterback. And I think everybody is putting all their eggs in the Josh Allen basket because they don't know what A.J. McCarron is and they don't know what Nathan Peterman is. You don't know what Josh Allen is either.
They're all unproven.
So, you know, it's like Yahtzee, man. You've got that all those dice in the cup and just roll it out and see what you get. That might be where we are come late August, early September. I mean, and that's probably unsettling for a lot of Bills fans, and I understand why, but that's the situation you're in. And at the quarterback position, Huggy Bear may not be too far off. I can't believe I'm saying that, but because
Huggy Bear.
Because at least you knew what Tyrod Taylor was.
Right.
You don't know what any of these three guys are going to be, not only because you haven't seen them, but now they also have to operate in a brand new offense that you don't know a whole lot about either.
And to be clear, what Tyrod Taylor wasn't enough, right?
31st in passing says it all.
For most fans, for the team, for the coaching staff, wasn't enough.
31st in passing says all you need to say about Tyrod Taylor's time here.
There's a call from Sean in Dallas. Sean, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Just a quick comment on what you guys were saying about Tyrod Taylor. As much as I love Tyrod being the leader of our team the last few years, I got his jersey. So this is not a slam on him at all. But over the last few years, I just figured out that, you know, Tyrod wasn't making the throws. You know, people want to talk about, you know, Jordan Matthews not having a good season, Kelvin Benjamin not having a good season, Zay Jones. I mean, you got to look at the guy that was throwing the ball. After it was all said and done for me, Tyrod was not making enough throws to make these guys good receivers. So when it's all said and done for me, after all these 3 years, I'm looking at he was not making the throws. He did not make these guys better like Tom Brady makes his players better. Okay, so the reason that I called, though, was it sounds like to me, Chris, that Josh Allen is being just as good. Maybe, and I'm not saying that he's ready to go just yet, but he definitely does not sound like he's lost and that he's actually doing pretty good in these early training. I'm just wondering, if he stays at this level right here, why would we not just put him in and let him go right from the get-go?
I don't think – here's where he's not at the level of A.J. and Nathan. It's the consistency down in and down out. So, perfect example. So, the other day in minicamp, Nathan Peterman is far and away the most consistent quarterback down after down after down. He's executing plays. He's going to the right place with his reads. More often than not, he's making completions, positive plays, staying on the field, first downs, etc. You go to AJ after that, for the most part, making plays, maybe not to quite the level of consistency on that particular day as Nathan Peterman, but again, making the right decisions, right reads, couple of plays where he's got to throw it away because he sees something late. Not terrible, not getting you killed, making the right decisions even when the play is not there to be made. Josh comes on the field trying to do those same things, but a pass is low and wide, a pass is over somebody's head, and then he runs to the far hash, throws it 50 yards across the field to make a 40-yard gain to Rod Streeter on the opposite side of the field into a 15-mile-per-hour wind, and you say, holy cow, there's 28 other quarterbacks who wouldn't even try that in the league, and he just made that play. That's eye-opening. It's fantastic. You love to see it. But then the next play is incomplete, and then he completes a 5-yard pass, and now it's third down. He doesn't make that play, and they're off the field. And so my point here is, guys, that while there are some eye-popping plays that only Josh Allen can deliver among these three quarterbacks, the NFL, and I've said this time and again, is about first downs, not touchdowns. It's about staying on the field long enough to get yourself in a position to score touchdowns. Now, some people might argue that and say, well, why wouldn't you put the guy on the field that can throw the 50-yard touchdown? Well, you would if that wasn't happening once every 15 plays. Josh Allen has to make the 10 to 15-yard plays more consistently to convince this coaching staff this guy's capable of making the right decisions to keep us on the field. Because one out of every 12 plays being a big play may get us down the field, but if we're only getting three and not seven because he can't make the next three plays after that, I don't know if that's the answer we need right now.
Well, and I don't disagree with you, Chris, but I think in some sense, maybe this is what the caller from Dallas is suggesting, because I believe this. There is time for Josh Allen to get there when they get to training camp.
There
I
is.
That.
No, no, there unquestionably is. And I'm not saying he can't. He may get there by training camp. And if he does, well, then, yeah, put him on the field. I'm not going to disagree with that. But I think the challenge for Josh Allen between now and the time we get to middle of August, when this ultimate decision is probably going to start to dry in the cement and cure, he's got to be consistent.
Yeah.
Play after play after play. Much like some of these receivers we're talking about in the receiving corps, if you want that job, you've got to stack days. Positive day after positive day after positive day. That's how Josh Allen is going to close this gap. And it's evident to me he has not done that yet, based on what Coach McDermott said today, which was, when we get to day one of training camp, Josh is still going to be predominantly with the threes.
Right.
That says to me, and validates kind of what I've been seeing out here, that the consistency in Josh's game hasn't come around yet to the point where they feel he's on a level with the two guys with a little bit more experience. He's not there yet. Could get there, but will not be there day one of training camp.
Gotcha. We're going to hear what Coach McDermott said about Josh Allen when we come back. Chris Brown with us. Steve Tasker's on vacation. Come on back for more. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Chris Brown filling in a little bit today. He's going to head out in a moment to watch some more of today's minicamp practice. Steve Tasker on vacation. We're here until 3 today. Good show as we move through the afternoon. Last caller talked about Josh Allen. Chris talked about Josh Allen a moment ago. Sean McDermott talked about Josh Allen today as well at his 11:30 a.m. news conference. McDermott kind of talked about what he likes, what he's seen from Josh Allen so far. Here's what he said.
Well, the first thing I look at is his poise, and is he handling himself in and out of the huddle the right way? Is he getting our offense to the line of scrimmage, making the proper checks, pre-snap checks? And he was able to do some of that, and I was impressed from that standpoint. And I thought he put the ball in a position for plays to be made at times, and then other times he could have put the ball in a better position. But overall, I thought he handled himself well with room to grow.
Room to grow, that is the key phrase, along with put the ball in a position at times and then other times did not. That's the kind of inconsistency you just referred to.
Right, and so that's the hurdle he's got to clear. I mean, look, he doesn't look terrible. It's just, I think he's coming along. I think he's made progress. And at any given moment, he has the capability of delivering the wow play that neither of the other two quarterbacks can. He is physically gifted beyond belief in comparison to the other two. It's not even close. He also presents a read option element to the offense that the other two do not.
Right.
They cannot execute the read option game Allen moves well enough and runs fast enough where he could do that at the pro level. So now you put him on the field, you have an extra dimension in your offense, you know, from a read option perspective. But I think they need to know that he can make the decisions consistently, down in, down out, series in, series out, or there are going to be a lot of three and outs with Josh Allen at quarterback if you put him in there prematurely.
Hey, Chris, 6 weeks from today, first practice at training camp. When the Bills get there in a month and a half, what do you think will be the biggest question about the Buffalo Bills going into training camp?
Who's the number one quarterback?
Yeah. Well, that's a good one. That's a big question.
Yeah, I mean, that's – Murph, we've been down this road before. I mean, just three years ago, there was a three-way quarterback competition. Tyrod – can you name all three? Tyrod Taylor, E.J. Manuel, and Matt Cassel.
I wasn't going to tell you.
So we've seen how this works before. When that was the headline of camp, it was the headline every single day. And it does get tired. It does get old. Do you remember Flutie Johnson? That was 3 years. Remember how old that got? So it just dominates the whole complexion of the team, and to a certain degree, unfairly so, because you know, there are 52 other guys that are going to end up on this final roster, or I guess it would be 50, because those three quarterbacks you would assume are all going to be on the roster when it's all said and done. But, you know, you there are other questions, too. You know, is Tremaine Edmonds going to really be able to run that defense? Is the center spot secure? You know, how does left guard look? Do we have a nickel corner we can count on that's going to be on the field all the time? You know, there are a lot of moving parts there and a lot of questions to be answered. And, you know, that's part of the reason why we do Camp Countdown on BuffaloBills.com. It's almost to remind people, hey, there's something else besides the starting quarterback job.
When do you start with that?
We'll start July 1st.
Okay, for the 25 days or so. I've been telling Steve Tasker this, and McDermott said it today as far as the quarterbacks. He did say, we have a plan. Now, I don't think the plan's etched in stone, but I do believe they have a plan for how many reps to get those guys in the training camp and what has to happen for a change in the rep chart, let alone the depth chart.
Right, and a lot of guys, a lot of media members were fishing around today with Coach McDermott to see if there is going to be a true equal across the board rep count rotation, kind of the way Rex Ryan ran it back in 2015 with his three candidates, and that was fair can be. That's not how it's going to start here in training camp for Josh Allen. It's going to be Nathan Peterman and A.J. McCarron largely working with the first and second team units and probably alternating day over day. And Josh is going to spend most of the time with the third team unit. He's going to be sprinkled in for a series here and a series there with the first unit. But until he demonstrates that he can dominate the third team segments, you know, in the practice setting, I don't anticipate a move up the depth chart anytime soon unless Nathan Peterman or A.J. McCarron are falling on their face out there, you know, in practice day after day.
Chris, thanks for this. Get back out there. You got more work to do, right?
Yeah, I
got
to watch the rest of practice so we can do the five things we learned from day three of minicamp.
That'll be up on BuffaloBills.com later today. Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. We're going to take a break from the Bills for a moment. When we come back after the top of the hour, Armando Salguero will join us to talk about the Dolphins and their OTAs and minicamp. Plus, we want to hear from you about the losses. What's the biggest loss for the Bills during this offseason? Is it, in fact, the loss of the quarterback Tyrod Taylor? Is it, in fact, the loss of Eric Woodrich incognito? Is it Preston Brown's departure? What do you think? That's our Twitter poll. We'll take your phone calls on it. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. The update from One Bills Drive, where it is the final day of the Bills mini camp underway. Started at noon. It'll be going on for about one more hour. After today, the Bills get 6 weeks off. The players do. They report for their first practice at training camp 6 weeks from today. Zay Jones still in the rehab process, according to head coach Sean McDermott, before today's practice. McDermott says Jones is attacking it aggressively. He says it'll be critical from now until the start of training camp for Zay, but he has no reason to believe he will not be in camp. More on the Bills coming up as the show moves along. At the Jets camp, Sam Darnold has made a strong impression on Jets coordinator Jeremy Bates, who says the rookie quarterback could be the starter if he continues to absorb the playbook at his current pace. Jarvis Landry, former Dolphins wide receiver, now with the Browns, says he has not heard from quarterback Ryan Tannehill since he was traded by the Dolphins and isn't surprised. Said we really didn't have a good relationship anyway. Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan has downplayed the absence of five-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Julio Jones from the mandatory minicamp. Says he plans to conduct July workouts involving Jones. Ryan has said he expects that he will be there when the Falcons go to training camp. The Bengals gamble on injured tight end Tyler Eifert off to a bad start. He has yet to take the field for this week's minicamp, and Marvin Lewis acknowledged yesterday that the status of the Pro Bowler from a couple of years ago is uncertain moving forward. And speaking of tight ends, the Chargers have reached out to Antonio Gates. Tom Telesco says he's been in touch with representatives for the veteran tight end about a possible return. Hockey news, Barry Trotz, coach of the Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals, says that he has already had discussions about a contract extension with them. It is opening day of the World Cup soccer, and the first match, the host country, Russia, facing Saudi Arabia. Russia wins it 5-0 in the Group A match in Moscow. Two other teams in Group A, Egypt and Uruguay, will play on Friday, along with the four teams in Group B. And the U.S. Open, golf underway, 6 tied for the lead at 1-under par, including American Ian Poulter. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy here, Steve Tasker on vacation. He is off for about a week and a half, and we're filling in. Chris Brown joined us a moment ago, and we'll get back with more from Chris, we hope, later on in the show. In the meantime, let's take a look at the Miami Dolphins. We had a look at the Jets earlier this week from Manish Mehta. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now, a guy who makes a living following the Miami Dolphins. He's done it for several years. Armando Saguero on the line with us, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. Armando, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
So Tasker gets time off? Since when? What's that all about?
Isn't that crazy? And he just started here about a month and a half ago, and he's on vacation already.
That's a great gig. How do I get that gig?
Sign up. In fact, we got an opening Monday if you're available. We can get you in here Monday. Armando, before we get to the Dolphins, I want to ask you about one of the newest Cleveland Browns, Jarvis Landry. What is his deal? Why is he almost preoccupied with his relationship with Ryan Tannehill, or his lack of a good relationship?
Yeah, I think what you're starting to see is the reasons behind why the Miami Dolphins decided that paying him, you know, $13, $14, $15 million a year to have him for the next 4 or 5 years was not probably the smartest option for them to take. There was, and there has been for a while, an underlying current of reasons the Dolphins weren't comfortable with Jarvis. He was more about, you know, him oftentimes than about team. You know, he didn't always take coaching the way they wanted to, you know, deliver it. He didn't really, I would say, he wasn't part of the solution. Let's make it plain. And so as far as they were concerned, yeah, there's going to be pain to be had when you lose 100-plus catches a year. But sometimes that pain is worth it if you can bring in like a Danny Amendola, who is, you know, blood and guts and all about team and will do whatever you need to do, have done, and whatever you ask him to do, and will be a leader among the wide receivers. If there's a little bit of a drop-off in production from Jarvis, that's fine, but the locker room will probably be better.
You know, you tweeted it out, and I agree with you. You said, basically you're saying, hey, Jarvis Landry, Ryan Tannehill is greater than Tyrod Taylor. Does he not acknowledge that? Landry doesn't realize that?
Well, obviously he's in Cleveland now, and yeah, everything Cleveland to him is awesome. And everything Miami to him is old and weathered and bad and not good enough. And look, let's face it, the Dolphins at times in the last 4 years have been old and weathered and bad and not good enough. But Jarvis Landry was part of that. He was one of, you know, he caught 100 passes 2 times in the last 4 years, and both times the team went 6-10. So where's his solution?
Right.
My point is, Tyrod Taylor is a fine quarterback, especially when he plays the Miami Dolphins, at which point he turns into Joe Montana. But Jarvis is going to find out that what looks really good in May and March and June is a different story in September, October, and November.
Right. One more thing about Jarvis. He lost me a couple of years ago when he lit up the Bills. Aaron Williams essentially ended his career. And then when I saw him in the New Year's Eve game, basically, well, he got ejected from the game. I thought it was kind of a selfish act. I don't know that anyone, including the Browns, should depend on Jarvis Landry to be a consistent, reliable difference maker, just because, mostly because of his personality. Am I wrong?
Think of that situation. By the way, Adam Gase called that moment an embarrassment.
Was.
Think of that situation. If the Dolphins, obviously the Dolphins were out of it, they were done. The Bills were trying to win a game to get into the playoffs. But if that situation had been one where the Dolphins win and they get in, basically what Jarvis Landry decided to do was take a swipe at somebody for no real great reason, and now you're ejected for the last 4 minutes of the game, and the team that's trying to, you know, win a game all of a sudden and is counting on you all of a sudden doesn't have you at the most important time in the fourth quarter of a game. What are you as far as a teammate? What are you as far as a smart football player? Because that had no intelligence behind it.
Yeah. Not a fan, I got to say. Armando Salguero on the line with us, columnist for the Miami Herald, who keeps a strong eye on the Dolphins, Dolphins insider. Much of the attention, I would think, through the OTAs and minicamp has been centered on Ryan Tannehill and his physical status. How did he look? What did we anticipate to get from Ryan Tannehill?
So he looked good, and that was good. But, you know, at this time last year, he looked good.
Right.
And that was good until the third, you know, practice or training camp when he blew out his knee again. And so I come from a background of, I was here in 2006 when Dante Culpepper came to the Dolphins and Sports Illustrated picked the Dolphins to go to the Super Bowl. And Dante Culpepper looked good in the offseason training and looked good in the mini camp and looked good in preseason. And then the regular season began and teams realized the man can't move and they got after him. And by the fifth game, he was benched. So much for, you know, Super Bowl aspirations. My point is that now is a time where anyone can say Ryan is fine, Ryan is good, it's wonderful. But the true test of Ryan Tannehill will come when the adversity hits in September, when teams decide, okay, well, you haven't played football in 600 days. We're going to get after you. And we're going to make you feel like you haven't played football in 600 days. And that's going to be a problem for you, Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. I know he's coming back from injury, but is there at all a sense around the Dolphins that the team has seen the ceiling from Ryan Tannehill, that we know who he is, we know how good he'll be, and that's it. We don't expect much more from him.
On the contrary, they think that when he got hurt in December of 2016, the first time,
right,
that he was just starting to scratch the surface of Adam Gase's offense and that, you know, he was finally getting it and finally was comfortable. And then he got hurt. And in that game that he got hurt, he had thrown like 3 touchdown passes and 1 interception. So he hasn't played football since then. So they're thinking if he can pick up where he left off, obviously with another year of knowing the offense and being in meetings and seeing how other players do it, they have something. If he is rusty and once again, you know, has to start all over again, then they're going to have early issues with him. But my guess is that whatever you've seen of Ryan Tannehill, forget about that, because either he's going to be better or he's going to be rusty. I don't think he's going to be the same guy.
Rusty would be a problem, wouldn't it, right? He is the answer at quarterback for them, I believe, correct?
For this year.
Yeah.
That it's what is it? Not for long.
Yeah. You know what else intrigues me about the Dolphins, and we've talked about it on our show, Steve and I, a couple of times. The Adam Gase gets a chance here to tear down his team and build it up again in search of a new chemistry, a new culture around his team. It's kind of rare that a coach would get to do that with, you know, that a move would be made like that, a roster would be torn apart for that reason with the same coach. How does he get that chance? What do they like about Gase? How does he get an opportunity to restart, to reboot?
Well, he gets an opportunity because he made the playoffs in his first season.
Yeah.
And last year was a fallback year, but they fell back without their starting quarterback. And so it would be unwise to decide that, well, you know, you had a bad year without your starting quarterback, you're gone. That they weren't going to do that. They're thinking now you have your starting quarterback back. You've made adjustments both to your locker room and your coaching staff. Let's see what you got. So it wouldn't really – I don't think that if I were the owner of the Miami Dolphins, I would be looking at Adam Gase sideways yet. Now, this season is going to be something of a tell for the ownership group. But up until now, you know, that's – he gets another chance because he's probably – probably the right thing.
I'm curious in about your take on Adam Gase, Armando, because I watch him and I see him as a play caller, probably a very accomplished play caller. But is he really head coach material? Does he have command of the whole operation, all the details, or is he just, you know, an exceedingly brilliant offensive coach who knows how to call plays?
He's a very bright man, but something beyond that that tells me it's going to be all right is he's a very good leader.
Okay.
You know, the players respect him. The players like him to a degree. I think that that's good. And I think that he knows what a good football team – let me back up. He knows what his football team must look like. So he has a vision in his head of what he wants to put on the field and how he wants them to play. And he thinks that that is going to work. It's yet to be seen whether he's able to put that thing together to where on a Sunday afternoon at Hard Rock Stadium, you see his vision manifesting. But at least he has a clue and a vision of what he wants. We've had coaches here that didn't exactly have clues or visions. And so... the result was a lot of losing and a lot of no playoff years and a lot of, yeah, we'll get them next year when it was never something that was realistic.
Just a couple of – I want to ask you about two other additions to the offense, Armando. One of them you already mentioned, Danny Amendola. Clearly he would be a cultural upgrade over Jarvis Landry, but production-wise, there's no way he can match Landry's production, but – what about Danny Amendola gets Dolphins fans excited? What is he bringing to the operation there that could be a difference maker?
So, no, he's not going to catch 100 passes. They don't want him to catch 100 passes. If you're a team that has a receiver that catches 100 passes for 800 yards, you're not a good football team. you're a team that was lacking somebody and didn't really get enough big plays to make a difference in the NFL. So what they want from him is, you know, he is going to be the safety net for Ryan Tannehill. They have already built something of a chemistry. They want leadership from him. Danny Amendola had a practice that was open to the media, and he dropped a pass, and what rolled out of his mouth after that was a series of F-bombs and other words that would make people, you know, cringe, but that tells you what kind of guy he is. He is a guy that demands excellence of himself, even in May, even during a meaningless, you know, OTA practice, so that when we get to the season, that's a catch for 6 yards or 7 yards and not a drop. And that is the kind of, I think, narrative that now drives the entire wide receiver room, because they all see that and they go, hey, if he doesn't feel like it's cool for him to drop that pass in an OTA practice, the guy that's got 3 Super Bowl rings probably doesn't feel like it's cool for us to drop these passes.
Yeah.
You got to understand, the Dolphins in September led the NFL in drops. And so, yes, he's part of the cultural change. By the way, Frank Gore, another addition that you might want to mention. he's part of that cultural change.
I want to ask you about a rookie, a very highly regarded tight end, Penn State tight end Mike Gesicki, second-round pick. Does he have a role to play, a major role to play in that Dolphins offense?
They hope he does. We haven't seen it yet. My guess is that, you know, he's a 6'6", 242-pound athletic freak. He's a former basketball and volleyball player. You know, he can jump to the moon. And my guess is early on in the season, he is going to be a red zone. They're going to have packages for him, even if he doesn't, you know, have the whole offense digested. He will have a package on passing downs and in the red zone where he can factor, and they can use that size and his speed and his athletic ability to their benefit.
And final question, Armando. You know, we're all in the AFC East. We're all in the same boat, Buffalo, Jets, Dolphins. We all kind of try to get as close as we can to the Patriots. In your assessment, 25 or more years covering the Dolphins, which AFC East team do you think might finish second? And, you know, is it the Bills? Is it the Dolphins? Is it the Jets? What do you think?
So I really liked what the Bills did last year, but I think that with their offensive line, and now they've got to bring a young quarterback along and kind of live the good and the bad of that experience, I think the Bills are in for something of a fallback kind of year.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Dolphins, if Ryan Tannehill can stay healthy, they should be better. I think the Jets, again, with the quarterback situation, what are they going to do? Are they going to play their experienced quarterbacks, or are they going to play their rookie? So at some point, they have to make a choice. It really, to me, boils down to who's got the best quarterback of those three teams. I would say that today, the Dolphins do. Tomorrow, during the season, depending on injuries and so forth, because, by the way, if Ryan Tannehill goes down again, the Dolphins are done. It's over. There is no, you know, Teddy Bridgewater waiting in the wings or anything like that,
right,
or a first-round pick waiting in the wings. They've got Brock Osweiler, so you know how that works.
Yeah.
So it's about the quarterback, and the second-best quarterback in the division right now is Ryan Tannehill.
Armando, thanks for this. We appreciate it. We know we'll see you down the line a little bit. Thank you very much.
Anytime. And get Tasker back to work.
Yeah, he's coming back because I'm getting out of here in a week or two. He's coming back. I'll
see you
that. Yeah, thanks. Armando Sardero, columnist for the Miami Herald, been around the Dolphins for more than 25 years, joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Yeah, let's get Tasker. No, it's his first day of vacation. We're good with that. We got a lot more to come, including your response to our Twitter poll, who will the Bills miss most, and did they set themselves up to recover from the loss of the likes of Tyrod Taylor, Incognito and Wood, Preston Brown, and some others. Phone lines open for that, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Come on back. We got a lot more ground to cover. One Bills Live presented. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live. John Murphy here, all by myself. Steve Tasker on vacation today. We had Chris Brown in earlier. We expect to hear from Bills head coach Sean McDermott in a moment or two. And Lorenzo Alexander scheduled to join us as well today. The Bills just coming off the field. OTAs, minicamp over. Next time the Bills hit the field, it'll be 6 weeks from today, July 26th for training camp. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? It's just a little hard for me to believe. It goes fast, you know. You wait. They come back. What'd they come back? April, mid-April, and all of a sudden that's over. With the workouts, conditioning work, and the OTAs, 10 days of OTAs, and now the 3 days of minicamp, and it's only 6 weeks away. All of a sudden, I feel like the summer is here once we know the training camp is coming. Our Twitter poll today, we'd love to get your response to this. Who the Bills going to miss of the players who departed? And especially now in terms of the fact that the offseason for the most part is over. When they're on the field again, it'll be training camp. So who will be most missed of the Bills' departures? On Twitter, 88% of you say it'll be the tandem of Wood and Incognito. 5% say Tyrod Taylor. 5% say Preston Brown. 2% say have somebody else in mind. Phone line's open if you care to discuss. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let us know what you think, and especially now that you know who the replacements are, right? Who we think the replacements will be. Going to be somebody new at quarterback. It's going to be McCarron or Josh Allen or Nathan Peterman. It looks like Tremaine Edmonds is going to be Preston Brown's replacement. As far as Wood and Incognito, it looks like it'll be Ryan Groy and maybe Russell Bodine or maybe John Miller back in the lineup at guard with Dukas moving over to the other side. So you kind of have a sense of who the replacements for those key critical players are. So now who do you think the biggest offseason loss is? Lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or on Twitter at OneBillsLive from the tweet sheet from Joshua. He's got a couple of guys under the other category. He says, I think the losses of E.J. Gaines and Leonard Johnson could greatly influence the season. Similar to the losses on the offensive line, we just don't know how their replacements will do. Yeah, you can make that argument. I don't know if they're the most important, but I think you can make that argument that you don't know. You just don't know. There are certainly candidates for replacing those two, E.J. Gaines and Leonard Johnson. Gaines on the outside, Vontae Davis lined up, ready to be the starter there. As far as Leonard Johnson, they're going to need a new nickel corner. They've worked out a few people there, but there's no certainty who that will be just yet. We talked with Chris Brown about that. The rookie Taron Johnson is in camp getting some reps there, and there are others as well. So, yeah, that's a pretty good point as far as under the other category. Thomas Wood tweets in, has to be Wood and Incognito. They were a really stable base for Shady in the run game. I would agree. That might be the biggest loss, except for the fact that I feel like the Bills are pretty well set up for replacements there. I really do. I think when you talk about the experience that they had with Ryan Groy as the starting center when Eric Wood got hurt a couple of years ago, that was impressive. And he didn't play last year, so he's kind of like out of your mind, right? You don't think about him too much. But I think that with Groy, and then it appears that Dukas is going to flip from the right side to the left, at least as minicamp comes to an end, and they've got John Miller, former starter, back in the offensive line starting group. I mean, basically, you've replaced Wood and Incognito with a couple of guys who have started before for this team on the offensive line. It's Groy at center and possibly Miller or Dukas, depending on how you want to look at it, as the new starters. Tiffany Daniels tweets in answer to her question. When your offensive centerpiece makes it known that losing Wood and Incognito is a big loss to the offensive line, it has to be a concern. Eric Wood was a leader on and off the field. It'll be a big challenge to replace a player of his magnitude. I agree, Tiffany, and you bring up the one part about Eric Wood that is not replaceable and hasn't been replaced yet, and that is the leadership. Now, it's playing ability, I think, is more important than leadership, but leadership is strong, too. So I think that's important. It's important that, and it's not something you can just anoint a leader. Well, ask coach about it. You have to have somebody emerge, and hopefully sooner rather than later. And one more tweet on this from the tweet sheet from Frank and Cheektowaga. Would have voted Tyrod up until a few days ago, but Hall of Fame Nate's performance in practice on Tuesday has made it clear that the Bills are set up at quarterback for many years to come. I have a feeling that Frank and Cheektowaga is being facetious. Peterman's had some good moments out here. Hall of Famer? Not quite yet. All right, we got more to come. Stick around. Come on back for more. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy with special guests, surprise guests, really. We have a couple of new guests in here. We don't have Steve Tasker. He's away. He is out for a week and a half. But we do have a couple of special guests who surprised me by walking in right after the minicamp session. Head coach Sean McDermott, you're used to seeing here on the show. Coach, thanks for stopping by.
Good to be here with you.
Next to him, head coach Reggie Witherspoon, the head coach of the Canisius College Golden Griffins, the basketball Griffs. Reggie, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Murph.
Good to have a little hoop talk on the show for a change. I'm a season ticket holder for Canisius basketball, coach. I am a big fan. Reggie, you know, I got great seats, too. You don't pay attention to me. You're locked in. I am two rows behind the visitor's bench.
You're the heckler.
When the situation calls for it, I let the other coach know.
I got to start paying more attention to him because he could probably give us a little insight to what they're doing, right?
At timeouts, maybe just take a glance over. A friendly glance. I'm there to help, Reggie.
I used to do that for Joe Mahalik at Niagara. I would sit behind the visitor's bench and work them a little bit.
Is that right?
Yes. I'll do it for you. Thanks for coming by. What brings you out here, Reg?
Well, I just came out to see Sean and see the Bills. You know, that's great. It's always great to be able to do that.
What'd you think of practice?
I loved it. I loved the pace of it, the rhythm of it, how fast it went, you know, how they got from one drill to another, how it was organized. I loved it. I really did.
Appreciate that.
You're coaching, Reggie, at Canisius in college basketball. You're coaching, what, 18, 19, 21, 22-year-olds? You're obviously indoors basketball. But what can you take from watching a NFL football practice that might help you set up a basketball practice?
The organization of it first. You know, I told you this before, Sean. It's amazing how you get that many guys – mobilized and moving together. Hmm. So to be able to see that, what did you have today? 90?
90.
I mean, that's you know, we try to get 15 guys to move like that. and then to be able to see them move together and be organized and be, you know, aligned correctly, I mean, that's something.
How do you do that, Sean? Where did you learn to do that?
Oh, well, you know, I kind of cut my teeth around Andy Reid, and that, you know, he's known for around the league. He's known for that in terms of his the efficiency, really, of his practices and the flow and the pace, the tempo. You know, we try and get on and get off as quickly as we can and make the most of our time. So, and I think our players appreciate that. It keeps them off their feet as much as possible. And we, you know, I tell them we'll take care of you, but when we work, when we cross over that line, it's time to work.
Sean, when new guys come in, whether they're rookies or free agents from somebody else in the league, do you ever have to get them up to speed on how you practice? And how do you do – what happens? Is there a position coach tell them this is what we do? Be ready for this.
There's an adjustment. Let's just call it, you know, there's an adjustment period. And for some more than others, right? Probably no different for you, coach, when you're bringing a young player or a transfer, if you're able to get a transfer or what have you. I mean, and we refer to it as adjusting to our habits. And so from time to time we'll film some of our – habits that are going on, not just on the playing field, but what's going on around or how we transition. We will actually film that early on as we lay a foundation of what we expect and how we want things done. Because when you do the little things right, the big things are that much easier. Yeah.
It's important to know, Reggie, you're a lifelong Western New Yorker and a Bills fan, right? And you
Absolutely.
Have a connection. Your daughter has a job here, right, in the ticket office part-time?
My daughter Rachel works in the ticket office part-time, loves the Bills. They all grew up watching the Bills, and so it was exciting. Last year was just thrilling to be able to see all that happen.
He's bragging. This guy, what he's been able to do, and just coming here to the Western New York area, being able to meet a coach and a man like Reggie and his staff and – you know, watch them and how they run their program. You know, I know he mentioned coming out here to learn, but, you know, I'm able to learn from watching him and his staff and what, again, they've been able to establish the standard which they expect to do things at. And you know, really, as it says, you know, iron sharpens iron. So having people come in and visit is good for us, is good for me to continue to learn and develop in what I do.
Reggie, back for 2 years now as the head coach at Canisius. What have you got, like 35, 40 wins over the 2 years?
So we're at it's 39, yeah.
39 wins. Yeah. That's pretty good. Did you exceed your expectations?
You know, I don't know how you are, but I never really thought past, okay, just, you know, what are we going to do on this day? And I just try to keep the goals all short term and, you know, long term striving to get to a point where we could say, okay, we could be a regular season championship. Now, I never thought it'd be able to do that quick, but everything we're doing, we're trying to build to that. But I never thought, okay, we're going to have this many wins this year and then this many wins the next year. I just thought we got to get a staff and build this thing every day.
Who do you got coming back, and who's coming in this year for the Griffs?
Well, we lost Jermaine Crumpton, who had a great year for
us. All-conference guy.
All-conference.
Niagara Falls.
From Niagara Falls, co-player of the year.
Yeah.
That's a big loss from a leadership standpoint, and he was the only guy that was there when we got there. And then Salvin Plininich is we lost as well. And then we had two kids transfer, you know, DJ Heath and Spencer Foley. So we brought in four new guys that we think can really help us. It's just a matter, and I was listening to Sean, how quickly they can kind of pick up what we're doing. And hopefully it doesn't, you know, we can keep things moving at a pretty good pace.
Crumpton, pretty good size coach, might be, you know, this is the home of Chris Manhurts, Canisius basketball, the Saints tight end. Don't you think he can play? He's a physical force, Reggie.
It's funny. We had Chris in practice, and I was asking Chris, do you think Jermaine could? And he said, he took long enough to answer the question that I knew what the answer was. He didn't want to say no. Crump was going, no.
I'm not. He didn't want anything to do with it.
It's a little bit different temperament, right?
There's some hitting going on,
you know. And especially, you know, and I asked Chris, how did you know you?
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you know this guy?
Yeah.
Saints
I do. Yeah, well, he never was with played, us in Carolina for,
yeah, that's
for
right.
a year or two
yeah.
there.
Never played
yeah.
football, right, until I mean, he went to the NFL. He came here.
That's a heck of a temperament yeah. to be able to adjust to. And that, to me, is different than, like, Antonio Gates, who
right.
I coached against when he was playing basketball at Kent State. Because he played football before, you know, was really good at it, but just didn't play it in college.
Right.
Whereas Chris didn't really play football. He just kind of moved over and got it. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Special. Yeah. Yep. Special young man.
With Reggie Witherspoon, the coach of the Griffs, Canisius basketball, Sean McDermott is here. I got a couple of football questions for you, Coach. The end of minicamp, how did it go? What's your assessment? What's your kind of overview of what you guys got done here?
You know, we were able to move the needle a little bit this offseason. You know, certainly I would say 2/3 of our team overall is new, and that's wow. that's somewhat the case every year. We're just in our second year right now, so we're a little bit, you know, still wet behind the ears in terms of our time here and our process here. I'll tell you what, I can't say enough about the effort, the focus, the time, the commitment of our players this offseason to what we've tried to get done, and it really starts with our staff, right, with everyone in this building. It's been a real team effort since day one when the players came in March, and we finished it up today, and the rookies will be here for a couple more days, and then they'll go off to where they're heading to this offseason.
The attendance was strong, right? I know these last 3 days, mandatory. You had no holdouts, no contract issues, but even before that, it looked like everybody was here almost every day. I didn't take attendance, but it seemed that way. Anyway.
Right. No, you're right. We had what I thought was pretty good attendance last season
yeah.
this time. Of year, and then this year, again, the needle moved in a positive direction. We had even better attendance this year. So credit to the players, also credit to the player-driven leadership, in fact, by holding people accountable, players wanting to be here, the culture that we've been able to build to this point, the great facility we have here, the energy around Western New York, and you experience it, I experience it. This is a great place to live, and the people that we're bringing here want to be here, and it's an exciting time to be in Buffalo.
Coach, Sean, you've been asked a lot about your quarterback picture already this spring, and you will be when 6 weeks when you get to training camp. Where does it stand right now, depth chart, rep chart, whatever you want to call it? How do you see those three? How have they worked through the spring, and what do you anticipate when you get to camp?
Yeah, all three young men have worked extremely hard. They're active learners, and they're really excited to grow. And they love to take coaching. They're leaders in their own respective ways. You know, as I've said before, AJ and Nate are working with the ones and twos, and Josh is working with the threes. Josh did work some with the ones this past week. We'll continue to do that periodically through training camp. And we're just going to stick with the plan and adjust it where and when need be. But I've been pleased with the work that they've put into this point.
I don't expect you to lay it out for us, but it sounds like, and I think you've said, you do have a plan, right, for the reps at quarterback, what you've done so far and what you're going to do in this summer at camp.
We do have a plan.
Would you like to lay it out? You need any audiovisual aids? No, but, I mean, no. You have something in mind how much work you want to get these guys.
We do. And you know, really from a rep standpoint, we've been able to get – as close to even as you can this time of year. And so, you know, we'll take it one day at a time. We have a plan and an outline going forward, but you got to remain flexible. And that's not only the case at quarterback, but every position. And Coach knows this, that things change from one day to the next. And due to injury, due to other things that happen, and so we just have to stay fluid and positive at the same time with great energy.
Josh Allen, first-round pick, 7th overall. There will always be attention on a guy that comes in with that in his background. And I wonder if you feel there will be, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but just like a feeling that we got to get this guy in at some point. We got to get him to play because he is 7th overall pick.
Well, I think there's some truth to that, right? I mean, you pick a player in the first round, again, regardless of position, and you expect, fans expect, that player to play at some point, and that's the case. Josh is going to play at some point, whether that's this year or next year, remains to be seen. At the end of the day, it's all about putting players in a position to be successful when they're ready. They'll go into the lineup and earning it at the same time. So the important part right now is we establish a good foundation of fundamentals, habits on and off the field, and that he is comfortable with each step in the process as we move forward.
Hey, let me just a couple other football questions for you. Sean McDermott, Reggie Witherspoon's with us as well. Coach McDermott, Steve Tasher and I have talked about it. Chris Browning and I were talking about it earlier today. At the receiver spot, it appears right now, outside looking in, you've got Calvin Benjamin and some untested guys, some unproven guys. Do you look at it differently? Do you see it differently when you look at that group maybe behind Calvin?
I do, somewhat differently. You know, we do have Calvin, and he's the one household name that we have. The other guys are not as big of household names at this point in time, but we had a lot of guys on our team last year that I would say weren't household names necessarily
right.
either.
You're right.
And so this offers a great opportunity to these young men to come in, have a strong training camp, and put their best foot forward. And help our football team win games this upcoming season.
There's a rookie I want to ask you about. He was on our show yesterday, Tremaine Edmonds, who, I mean, I said to him, you got a lot on your plate, and he just seems to accept it, right? I mean, everything you've asked him to do, he seems good with it. He doesn't seem overwhelmed at all. What do you see from him?
Well, to this point, he's veteran beyond his years,
yeah.
If that makes sense, for a rookie player. Sometimes I look out there and I forget for a moment that here's a rookie leading our defense in the middle of our defense as a primary signal caller, somewhat like running point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't pretend to know a whole lot about hoops.
No, you got that one right.
But it's important that he can orchestrate the defense and line people up and make the proper checks and then also make his own plays. And you can't forget about that, too, because I think I could line people up, but I'm not sure I could make the plays I need to make. So he's off to a great start. Coach Babich has done a phenomenal job, Coach Frazier, and that process will continue with Tremaine this offseason.
Reggie, Sean is right. You're point guard now, 2 years in. He came in and started right away pretty much, right?
He did, yeah.
Give me his name again. I can't.
Malik Johnson.
Yes, Malik. He's my favorite player on your roster.
And maybe some similarities in that Malik has an older brother who started at Indiana and has a father who coached.
There you go.
Who coaches now.
Yeah.
And so I think he has a feel and an instinct that accelerates his development a little bit. And I was listening to you talk about the quarterbacks too. You know, you have two guys that are with you for the first time, right?
Mm.
And you have one guy that's going into just his second year with you.
Right.
And so when you're going through that process, you're trying to figure out, let me see, what is he capable of now? How much can we give him? He's trying to figure out, what do they expect of me? And that it takes a while before you can say, okay, well, this guy is here, you know, because
right.
every day you got to evaluate that and assess that to figure, okay, now he can handle this. Can we give him a little bit more? Is he ready for that? You give him too much, right? And now you got confusion. It looks like he's not good. Well, he's just not ready.
Right.
It doesn't mean he's not good.
Right. I got you. Hey, Sean, two more things I want to ask you about. This, we're moving into the 6-week period before training camp where it's been said before. I saw somebody mention it today, some coach in the NFL. It's a little bit unsettling when players get away from the complex, go back home, many of them, most of them, and you gotta wonder, are they going to behave? Are they going to continue to work out? Are they going to continue on the path we've tried to set them on? You must discuss that with your team, right?
At length and probably ad nauseum for them.
Already? Had that discussion?
Already.
What are you telling
I'm always concerned about our players all the time, let alone for sure when they're not in the building. And the further away they get from us, the more concerned I get just because life happens.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have, as Coach mentioned, 90, 89, 90 players, just statistically, you know, there's a better chance that something mm-hmm. could happen. Life could happen. And so these are young men that are trying to make the right decisions. And so we just continue to hope and pray that those that they make the right decisions this time of year, specifically, but all year. And so, you know, that's a big point of emphasis for us as we start to go our separate ways for a few weeks here, as you mentioned, John. And you know, every year it comes up, and you see something that happens, and, you know, God willing, nothing happens this year.
Yeah.
Just over the course of history, that this is the time of year, one of the times of years that of the year that things come up.
Sean, let me ask you one a little bit off the wall question. You're a Philadelphia native, sports fan, I'm sure, in Philadelphia, and a guy who was a longtime sportscaster in Philadelphia, Al Meltzer. You know that name?
I do.
He passed away. Did you see that? And he did Bills football. Reggie probably remembers. He did like 6 years of Bills play-by-play in between Van.
Is that right? I didn't realize that.
What do you remember about him growing up in Philly?
Oh, I mean, he was one of the faces and names of sports in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I grew up. I mean, you listen. You know, I'm sure we all can relate to a voice, a familiar voice that you may not see the face, but you hear the voice on the radio or the TV's on in the other room, and you hear the voice, and you can associate it to who, right? And you grow up around those voices, and he's one of the ones I grew up around in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Did 6 years of Bills, Reggie, the famous O.J. years, the O.J. Were you alive even?
Oh, how
old are you?
Yes.
You're almost as old as me.
57.
Yeah. Yeah. So you remember the famous O.J. call in 2000.
57 years young.
Yeah.
Coach, downtime for your players? You can take some downtime yourself coming up?
We will. Yeah, we will, and reconnect with my family and be a husband, father, and son, and spend some good quality time and be able to hit the reset button will be good.
What about you, Reggie? You take some recruiting is over, or you have periods this summer still? Or?
We still have, you know, here's what I say about recruiting. You have to do it every day. It's like shaving, right? You start to look a little bad, right? So so we got to do that. But, you know, we're trying to finish up our schedule. We have guys in summer school that are finishing up next week, and then we have our four incoming guys come in the week after.
And they can play a little bit, right, during the summer?
Yeah, we can work them out 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
And so that's on the court, and then they get in the weight room, and we're trying to kind of, again, habits, as you said. We're trying to develop some habits and see if we can kind of get them accustomed to what we're expecting of them.
Yeah. You guys, thanks. This is great. Two of my favorite coaches. Thank you.
Love it.
Thanks,
let's do it again.
Yeah. All right. Sean McDermott.
We'll keep adding coaches up
there. Set the table down there. Reggie Witherspoon, Sean McDermott joining us in studio. We got another hour to go. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Minicamp over. It ended just about 45 minutes ago. Strong attendance. After today, now the Bills have 6 weeks off. Players have 6 weeks off. They report for their first practice at training camp 6 weeks from today. Head coach Sean McDermott, you just heard him, among other things he said earlier today. Wide receiver Zay Jones still in the rehab process. McDermott says he's attacking it aggressively. And from now until the start of training camp, McDermott says it'll be critical for Zay Jones. No reason to believe he won't be ready for training camp. Around the NFL, Sam Darnold making a strong impression at Jets minicamp, according to offense coordinator Jeremy Bates, who says the rookie quarterback could be his starter if he can absorb the playbook at his current pace. Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan says he anticipates that Julio Jones will be there for the workouts in July, even though Jones has not attended the mandatory minicamp and the earlier voluntary workouts. Matt Ryan says he plans to have Jones there for the July workouts. The Bengals worried about often injured tight end Tyler Eifert. He's been unable to take the field for this week's minicamp, and Marvin Lewis said the status of the 2015 Pro Bowl tight end is uncertain for the start of training camp. And speaking of tight ends, the Chargers are checking in on Antonio Gates. Chargers publicly said goodbye to the 8-time Pro Bowler in April after 15 seasons. Gates will be 38 years old in 4 days. Had a career-low 316 receiving yards, but Tom Telesco, the Chargers' general manager, says he has reached out to see if he wants to return. World Cup soccer. Russia beat Saudi Arabia today 5-0 in Moscow. The other two teams in Group A, Egypt and Uruguay, will play on Friday, along with the four teams in Group B. Today's game, the first games on opening day of World Cup soccer. And this year's U.S. Open, a chance to celebrate American golf. Americans hold all four of the golf major trophies for the first time since 2004. Right now, six players tied for the lead in the first round of the Open at 1 under par. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy here, Steve Tasker on vacation. Minicamp is over. We are joined in studio by our friend Lorenzo Alexander, just off the field from minicamp. Going into this minicamp, and I know going into the OTAs even, you, because you're a veteran, I get this, you don't think this amounts to much. I know it's work and you're putting in work, but
I don't think I ever said that.
No,
I said
you didn't say that.
I said it's not real football.
That's
yet.
What you said, yeah.
Yeah, but you can still build a great foundation through fundamentals, technique, better understanding of the scheme, chemistry as far as communication with other players, and really start seeing some of the young guys, you know, how well they're grasping the defense, being on another level, as well as they transition from college to the pros.
You can do all that. Did the Buffalo Bills accomplish that?
Yeah, we did, I think, a good job of moving in that direction. You know, I think some guys, you know, obviously had some setbacks. You know, we mentioned a guy like a Zay Jones that you would have loved to have out there. But I think overall, when I look at Tremaine, obviously in my room, when I look at Josh Allen, those guys got a lot of reps, much needed reps, to really start that maturation process of them being accountable to our offense and defense and being guys that we look to help us win in the 2018 season.
Lorenzo, we had Tremaine on the show with us yesterday. Steve was here yesterday with Tremaine. And, look, I know he's got to be this way, but he is extremely serious and focused. And is there a chance for him to lighten up at all, do you think, over the next 6 weeks?
I mean, he has a lighter side to him. Like today we did a thing we called rookie events, where our rookies get up and give us current events about politics. They give us a couple of real stories, and then they give us a couple of riddles.
And so were they prepared for it? Did they prep for it?
He was underprepared, but he had his riddles ready to go, but they were kind of weak, and he rattled off like three riddles. Deion got the first two. I got the last one like that. Normally it takes us a while to think about it, but he had fun with it, you know, laughing. So, but when he's in football mode, he's serious because he wants to get it right. He wants to be the best at his position because I think he understands what it means, or the magnitude of what it means to be a first-round pick. And he has the ability and the want to be great. And, you know, that just comes from being a football family and want to play at a high level because he really wants to represent the name on his back well.
We just had Sean McDermott on, Coach McDermott, talking about Tremaine Edmonds, said kind of an interesting thing. You know, you worry, at least you talk about, can he do all this? Can he absorb the new defense? Can he pass it on to everybody, call the defenses, line people up? McDermott said, yes, I want him to do that, but I also want him to play well.
Yeah.
I need him running around the field, making tackles and playing well.
Yeah, and I think that's our job as well as the people around him. You know, you think about Micah, JP, myself, Kyle. Those are a lot of veterans around him that know the defense, where they don't necessarily have to rely on him to make every single call. We'll actually help him as well. And as he matures and grows into what it means to really be a Mike linebacker at this level, we can wait on that because we have other guys around him. But he's going to be a guy out there running around, hitting, and I think he's going to even take another step once we get the pads on, and you can really see his athleticism and his physicality that he brings to the game.
Got Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us for the next couple of minutes. If you have comments, questions for Lorenzo about the end of minicamp, about where the Bills stand, give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. As I read the story in the update a minute ago about Antonio Gates, age 38, he turns 38 in 4 days.
Right.
You know where I'm going with this. Can he play at 38 years old?
Why not?
Because he's 38 years old.
Man, it's a couple of guys across the league that are just cut from a different cloth, and he has the ability to do it. It's all about his mentality. You know, does he still enjoy the process of getting ready, you know, the week leading up? That's where most vets kind of fall short of. And, you know, obviously last year they had a new head coach and, you know, going through that transition process. But the only reason they're probably reaching out is because number 17 is saying, hey, I need my guy back, my safety blanket, the guy that's going to make plays. Obviously they got Keenan Allen as well out there, but it's not like having a big athletic tight end that can get you out of some tough downs.
You've gone against Gates, huh, several times, I would think?
Yeah, I mean, he's just athletic. Yeah. Gets in the space very well. He's not the greatest blocker, but that's not what they want him on the field for. He's able to stretch the field, find holes in the defense. He boxes you out because he's a former basketball player, uses his body very well, and has sure hands. They're not going to ask him to stretch the field. I don't think a guy like Jason Witten ever stretched the field like Gates did, but he can still play. Gates can play more of a game like Witten, you know, the possession type, pushing off, getting in the holes, protecting the ball, extending the chains, and be a big time threat down in the red zone.
On the topic of tight ends, Lorenzo, and this came up on our show earlier in the week, Steve and I got into a little discussion about this. And I'm not going to ask you who's better, but is there really a comparison to be made between like Rob Gronkowski, a healthy Rob Gronkowski, and Travis Kelce of the Chiefs? I mean, is Kelce even in that league? What do you think?
The physicality part is what separates them two. I mean, I think they're both great pass catchers, But when you talk about run blocking, Gronk can take it to another level. Yeah. I mean, he's a handful if you don't show up your pads. I mean, we all of us remember that clip where he ran the guy out of the back of the end zone. Yeah. Kelce doesn't, not that he can't, he doesn't just have that in him. That's not his game at all. I think Gronk is just a great combination of being a great pass catcher and will put his nose in it and get physical with you as well.
Let's talk a little bit about our Twitter poll today. You may not like this, Lorenzo, but I want to get your take on it anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. It deals with, look, and you got to think of it in these terms. We are at a kind of a milepost anyway of the offseason with, minicamp ending today. People depart. They always do around the NFL. The guys who have departed have, for the most part, been replaced. We have a good sense of who the replacements are.
Okay.
All right. So that's the prelude to this. This is the setup. So the question
I know. This is part of the NFL. Why would I be upset with this question?
Well, because I don't want
my guys, my teammates?
No. Who's the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills? What was? Was it the offensive lineman, Wood and Incognito? Was it Tyrod Taylor? Was it linebacker Preston Brown? Somebody else? So you can see on the Twitter poll, 88% of our respondents say, well, it's the offensive lineman, Wood and Incognito. And look, there are answers for each one of those as far as their 2018 replacements, but do you want to weigh in on that at all? Who do you think you'll miss the most?
Who will I miss the most?
Well, yeah, who will the Bills miss the most?
Oh, I mean, because that's two different questions.
Right.
I mean, that Wood and Incognito combination, I mean, it's just hard. I mean, when they have, you know, they're protecting the guy that's throwing the ball. And their communication, their leadership, the attitude that they brought to the game, not that we don't have guys that can fill in that role. It's just when you have veterans, you can just trust and know what you're going to get out of them every single down. And you know they can get in the guys' faces and pick them up. I think we're kind of still waiting on to see who's going to kind of come out of that group in the offensive line room. And maybe they're already doing it, you know, within the O-line room, but I haven't really been able to see a guy just really step up and just take charge and, like, bring the guys, and we're going to play at this level. So that's another thing. And that takes time, and you'll see, cause since we have so many new guys, you know, kind of getting re-back inserted into the thing. We have Russell Bodine that's here as well. That's a veteran. So it'll be interesting to see who kind of really rises above.
You're talking leadership mostly.
Yeah, this leadership. Yeah. I mean, that's what E. Wood and Richie brought. I mean, they'll get in your face, and I mean vocal leaders. So we have guys that lead by example, that are pros, that do everything the right way. But sometimes you need a guy that says, hey, let's come together. That's not good enough. And so we need somebody to step up in that way to really take our offensive line to another level. And that's in every single position group. You got to have somebody like that.
Was Richie really good at that role? Was he big in that role? Not, I know
he had his own way about going about doing it in his own Richie way.
Yeah.
He would let you know. And that's good because it was genuine. You understood where he was coming from, and he was in your face about it. And Ewood was the same way.
So that would be your choices, who might be missed the most, that group, Wood and Incognito.
Yeah, I mean, because everything runs through the trenches.
Right.
I mean, as much as we like to see, you know, the guys pretty, you know, running shady, running big time, and Kelvin catching balls, and, you know, guys on the outside doing things, the game is won and lost in the trenches. They open up the holes. They protect your quarterback. If you don't have a solid group there and a group that's going to play above their individual parts and play great collectively, you're going to have a long season because it is an offensive-driven league and defense is going to get after you.
We got a couple of thoughts on this from phone calls. John calling from Syracuse. John, you're on the air with me and Lorenzo Alexander. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, fellas. Number one, I don't have anything to add. I would also say losing Richie and Eric Wood is certainly the number one loss that we had. Lorenzo, that was a nice tackle you made on Leonard Fournette there in the playoff game on the goal line.
I appreciate it.
I like the you kind of lassoed him and brought him right down. So you played a great game in that game. Bills fans appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, and I had a great time out there. You know, you just never know when playoff game is going to come around, and just want to continue to play at a high level. Obviously, I'm a year older now, but be able to finish the season like that. I can kind of take some of that juice and bring it over here and you know, still show guys and people in general that I can still play at a high level even though I'm 35.
New season. Last season was great. The playoff appearance was great. Is there any carryover? And I think you just kind of hinted that there is a little bit carryover effect from being a playoff team last year, winning 9 games and playing in the playoffs?
Well, there's a lot of carryover. I mean,
really?
And the biggest thing for me, carryover, is from as far as lessons learned. We have a lot of guys that played in that game, especially defensively, where we had some opportunities that we could have capitalized on. So next time that comes, we expect guys to step up. Number two would be just from the start, we have an expectation. We're not trying to wait and see how good we can be defensively. We know that we can play at a high level and that we know we need to eliminate those three games that we had last year to really put our team in an advantageous spot to where we're not waiting to see what happens on the last play of the drive in somebody else's game. We want to be able to control our destiny. And as far as defensively, that's our mindset, being the leaders of this team and really putting ourselves in that position by the way we play defensively.
We're in studio a couple more minutes with Lorenzo Alexander of the Buffalo Bills as minicamp is over. If you have comments, questions, give us a call. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Teams are all scattering and you know, there are interviews going on all over the league. Did you see what Tyrod Taylor had to say?
Yeah, why wouldn't he not say that? Why wouldn't he want to play us and then beat us?
Let's play it for the folks who haven't heard it. Tyrod Taylor was asked about, I don't know what he was asked about, but he talked about the Bills and how he'd love to face the Bills again. Here's his soundbite. Tyrod Taylor, former Bills quarterback.
Definitely motivated. Things didn't end the way I would say I would have liked it to for in Buffalo, but God has a plan. They wanted to move forward, and we're still in a good position. We could possibly see those guys in the playoffs, or we could knock those guys out of the playoffs.
You'd love that.
I would definitely love that. It's definitely added motivation, and I take that to work with me every day.
Tyrod, you're right. Nothing wrong with that.
No, of course. I would want to beat whatever former team I played with, too. They didn't want me anymore. Yeah. Now I'm going to see you in the playoffs. So, yeah, now I'm about to show you what you're missing out on. Simple. I ain't mad at Tyrod. We still cool.
Tyrod has a knack, doesn't he, of saying he tells the truth for the most part.
He said it in a respectful way. It ain't like, all them dudes over there trash. I can't wait to see him, you know.
Yeah. His teammate Jarvis Landry, who's out there bad-mouthing his former quarterback.
No.
Tyrod's the exact opposite of that almost.
Yeah, he does it in a more respectful way. But that's Tyrod's personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lorenzo's with us. A couple more minutes. Phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Last Saturday, Aces Foundation, you had your big bowling event. How did it go?
Went great. We had about 200 people come out and bowl. I had about 15 to 20 guys show up as well and hang out and bowl with the fans and our sponsors. And it was just a great time. We raised about 13 grand.
Wow.
So it was very successful. We're going to be able to do a lot of things with Tim Delaney and the South Park football team as far as filling some needs for that organization and for some of the kids' families as well as the Bell Center. So that's what I'm looking forward towards is just being able to help those communities and help those people out.
What do you do for South Park, like equipment needs or
field? Equipment, field. You know, they have like the huddle where they can watch film and compete.
Right.
Sometimes families may be struggling in a certain area where they need help. And a lot of times that stress falls on the kid and he may have to go to work and do certain things. And just be able to be there and fill some of those holes financially can relieve a lot of stress on the family and especially the responsibility that some of our young men are feeling when at home isn't as ideal as one would want.
How'd you get connected with South Park?
Just a connection through the United Way, talking to Rima and Gretchen, two people that are really influential in our community development department here, and thought Tim Delaney would be a great fit. Saw the work that he was doing with a lot of these young men, going above and beyond with his, you know, on his his job description as a coach, you know, spending some of his own money, going to pick kids up. He reminds me a lot of my uncle and how he poured into a lot of young men's lives, and I just want to attach myself and try to just really emphasize anything that he's teaching and just help the young men understand it a little bit quicker.
Speaking of Aces Foundation, I understand you have an event coming up this Saturday down in Virginia, Herndon, Virginia, right?
Yeah, I'm going at Jimmy's, Old Town Tavern.
It's
a Bills bar.
It's a classic Bills
bar.
Bar, right down there in
Herndon. So hopefully a lot of Bills fans come out. If you know people that live in the Northern Virginia area or in driving distance, definitely come out. I'll be there from 3 to 5. Just kind of hanging out, signing autographs, you know, raising some money for Aces as well. Because I still have some connections in the Virginia area that I work with as well.
It says Lorenzo will sign autographs, take photos to support the Aces Foundation. Enjoy our Saturday night prime rib, beef on weck, our buffalo platter, and our award-winning wings. Have you ever been to Jimmy's?
I've been there a couple of times. I've eaten there. I actually did this event last year, and Jimmy has done a great job as far as sponsoring Aces and really helping me make an impact in the community.
And that is the start of your six-week break here coming up.
That is the start.
I don't imagine that's the highlight, right? What do you got in
mind? That is one of the highlights. Okay. You know, that's my life mission. I mean, I love to serve, love to impact. But then we're going to Arizona. Going out there for the 5 weeks or so, and then we'll go to Utah to visit my wife's family as well before I come back to training camp.
A lot of family time coming up.
a lot of family time.
You know, we all know, people who watch the show, you spent this past offseason in Buffalo.
Yeah.
You lived through the worst months.
Right.
These next 6 weeks will probably be the best weather all year in Buffalo, correct, and you're getting out of town.
Well, I have some other things that I have to attend to.
I'm just saying, you're going to miss the good part of Buffalo.
Training camp, I have enough good times. You know, okay, that's a good weather doing training camp.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to camp, or are you at the stage of your career where you're like, oh?
No, I like camp. I like putting the helmets and shoulder pads back on. I actually get to hit somebody. You know, by day, you know, six or seven, you know, I don't need all the contact. But initially, you want to get out there and just start hitting folks because you kind of haven't done it in a while.
First of all, and I asked Sean about this a minute ago, Coach McDermott, player behavior during these six-week periods, never been a problem with you, but do you think it's an issue for any of your teammates, like being unsupervised, not having it's mostly routine, right? You're out of the routine.
Out of your routine. You have more time, free time to, you know, go hang out, you know, maybe take a vacation or two over the weekend. And it all comes down to understanding that your actions don't only affect you. And so when you're out about having fun, making sure that you react in a certain way that's going to be shine the best light, first of all, on you and your family, and then the organization. And when you have that in mind when you're outside, you know, whether you decide to go to Vegas or Miami or wherever you may do, a local club, and you put yourself in these certain situations, just understand that most of the time people know who you are and that people are going to try to get a rise out of you, and that just be the bigger person and walk away, because we never win as athletes anytime that we may react, even if we are justified if somebody came at us disrespectfully. So you have to have all that in mind and have it predetermined before you go out, and really be mindful of it. And even maybe, I know some guys even have like a buddy that's not going to drink that can kind of get you out of there and get you back in a safe way, because, you know, guys are going to hang out. You're not going to stop guys from doing that. But I think you can go out and do it in the right way, because in my younger days before I was married and had kids, I was one of those guys hanging out too, but I never got in trouble because I had the right, plan kind of set up if things did happen that didn't need to happen.
Yeah. Did you have a discussion about this with any of your teammates, or do you?
No, I think Sean addressed it. Leslie addressed it in the defensive room. I'm pretty sure Brian did in the offensive room as well. But at the end of the day, when you have respect and love for your teammates, you act accordingly. The same with your family. You try to do the best you can as far as being respectful, so bad things don't shine a bad light on you.
Where is this team today compared to where you were a year ago at this time, breaking mini camp, heading to training camp?
We're light years ahead. I mean, we understand each other. We've had a whole year of getting to know each other personally on the field, going through battles, experiences. So this team has a much better foundation, I believe, this year, just because we have some history of battling together. Even though we have a huge nucleus of new guys as well,
right,
we've been able to communicate that, our culture and our standard here, because we also have, you know, 20 to 25 guys that were here with Sean in the past and understands what he expects and what the Buffalo Bills expect and really what our leadership group expects of all of our players as well.
You know, it's one thing, we put together a Twitter poll and I was thinking about that question, and it's a legitimate question. Personnel is important. You lose people, you gain people. But the one thing that's hard to quantify from my standpoint, I was doing a radio interview in Boston the other day, and it's hard to even put your finger on it, but there is, you have set a standard here, even in 1 year. Not that it's complete, not that
right,
it's in place fully, but there's a new standard and a new culture here that I don't know how you quantify it. I don't know what it means. Does it mean 1.5, 2 wins? I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know, and it's forever evolving. But I do know it plays a big part in when those games come down to crunch time. As far as I know, I can trust this guy and be confident. And confidence means a lot when you're on the football field as far as competing with people. If I'm going to walk into an alley, I want people that I can trust and believe in. I know they're going to do their job. And when you have that and you have the security and that understanding, you're really able to go out there and play freely, because you're not trying to worry about, okay, is this guy going to be there? You're just worried about your job and doing it at a high level.
Do you keep up your very strict nutritional regimen during these next 6 weeks?
Yeah, I actually kind of increase it.
Do you?
Yeah, because I want to come into camp and be, you know, fairly lean and be able to move and be able to run around even better than what I was showing during OTAs.
And it doesn't impact your fun or your enjoyment of the six-week
vacation? Not my fun. I have fun hanging with my wife and kids, you know, and
do you work out in the next 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, do you have a place in Arizona?
Yeah, I'm going to Arizona. I'm actually, my trainer I trained with for the combine, and they actually trained me when I was coming up in high school and college before I got to that point. His name is Thomas Weatherspoon, and he actually relocated to Arizona, so that's who I'll be with. And it's kind of like full circle for us. You know, he started my career, and now I'm kind of ending it working out with him.
Do the Bills send you and all the players home with a six-week program here? Here's what you should do, or do you just
Yeah, they do have it. They have this app called Coach Me Plus where they'll align, where you can get on your phone and look at what they want you to do. I think most guys, if you have a trainer, you kind of do your own thing just to kind of get away and change it up so your body doesn't get used to the same workouts. And then you, most of the time, as a veteran, you know what you need and where you really need to emphasize in the offseason. So when you come back, you're hitting on all cylinders.
When you come back, will you be on the show with us still?
Of course.
Okay.
You know, I'll leave that for another day. I'll leave for Jay. Jay is not here.
There's no, don't throw your Jay insults out. He's not here to enjoy him. And did you miss Steve Tasker here today?
Well, he's on vacation. That's my guy, man. What do you want me to do? Are you upset because he was able to negotiate a better vacation
no,
package?
No, I don't know if he has a better one. I have a pretty good one.
Oh, okay.
It just starts a little bit later than his. Look, once I take off in a week or two, I'm gone.
You're gone.
For a while, yeah.
They try to fill you in with people. They're trying to get me to do it, but I'm not here.
I know they asked. I know. Have a great month and a half. We'll see you at training camp, I guess.
I'll be there. Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay. See you out there.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us in studio. We got more coming up. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Well, gentlemen, we are coming upon it, and the juice should break the National Football League rushing record in this next series. Simpson running left. Simpson breaking loose. And there it is! He's all right. All right. He needed 4 yards. He got 5. And this crowd, his whole team is gathering around him and congratulating him. Hit him on the head. There isn't a person sitting down. Give credit to these Jets fans. They came here to see him break the record. There's no doubt about it. I think the Jets showed up to see him break the record.
The voice of the great and now late Al Meltzer, former play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills, who passed away. He worked that game, the famous O.J. Simpson 2,000-yard, surpassing 2,000-yard game in December of 73. Al Meltzer was the play-by-play voice of the Bills for 6 years, from 1972 through 1977. Passed away last night, 89 years old, a Philadelphia native, a guy who was an icon of Philadelphia. You may have heard Sean McDermott talk about him a little bit ago. A Syracuse native. I didn't know that till I read his obituary today. Worked here in Buffalo for a while and then came back to do the Bills for 6 seasons. How did that happen? I asked Van Miller once, how did that happen that you missed 72 through 77? Van, of course, was the play-by-play voice of the NBA Buffalo Braves at that time. There was some kind of dispute. They didn't want him to do both, and so Van chose the Braves instead of the Bills, and Al Meltzer came in from Philadelphia, worked the games on WKBW radio for 6 years, along with Eddie Rutkowski and Rick Azar. Rick Azar kind of sounds like him, too. Many people, when they heard that, thought that was Rick, but that was Al Meltzer, most of that play-by-play. Sports anchor in Philadelphia for 20 years. Did play-by-play there for the Sixers, the Eagles, the Phillies. Did Big Five basketball, which was huge, down there. He was at the odd when the Flyers won the Stanley Cup, second consecutive Stanley Cup in 1975. He was on the ice doing Flyer interviews at the odd. 1980 World Series, he covered that. He was 89 years old, a former all-city high school basketball player in the city of Syracuse. Al Meltzer passed away last night at the age of 89, one of three individuals to handle play-by-play radio duties for the Buffalo Bills. And we pass along our condolences to his family and to his many fans. The guy was an icon, a legend in Philadelphia, and for 6 years was the radio play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills, Al Meltzer. Maybe you remember him. Maybe you don't. Give us a call if you remember. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Our Twitter poll up and running today. You can weigh in on that on the phone lines. We got time now. We got about a half hour here with plenty of time to deal with the Twitter poll. Twitter poll deals with now that we're at where we are at, which is at the end of the of mini camp and 6 weeks until training camp. Now, what do you think was the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills? They plugged holes at most of these spots on the offensive line, at quarterback, at linebacker, at other positions. What do you think? What was the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills, knowing what you know about who is lining up there and getting ready to play. Is it offensive line, Eric Wood, Richie Incognito? Yes, according to 87% of you, you think that is the biggest offseason loss for the Bills. 5% of you think it's the loss of quarterback Tyrod Taylor. 5% of you think it's the loss of linebacker Preston Brown. And 3% say somebody else in mind. If you'd like to elaborate, give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Biggest loss offseason for the Buffalo Bills, especially when you think about who's in there now, who's running there now. From the tweet sheet, Rob Spidell says, I agree with Jordan Matthews. We had a caller suggested Jordan Matthews, the wide receiver, was the biggest loss. Rob Spidell says, I agree with Jordan Matthews being the biggest loss because the receiving core has been a hodgepodge of practice squad players for the last 2 years, save for Matthews and Benjamin, due to injuries and trades and the inability to resign. I think he's going for Sammy Watkins there and ran out of characters. Maybe. Inability to resign who? Robert Woods, maybe? I don't know. He didn't finish. Patrick Helper tweets in, the loss of Taylor is not a big loss except from the knowing of what you have in a quarterback standpoint. While he was fairly constant in the big picture, moving him could be the biggest gain. Good point. Really good point about that, Patrick Helper. And Chris Brown kind of made a similar point. There is uncertainty about the quarterback spot because we don't know, quite frankly, who's going to win that job right now. I think it'll be A.J. McCarron. It might be Josh Allen. It might be Nathan Peterman, which leaves you with uncertainty at the quarterback spot. But we'll see. And maybe that turns out at the end of the year. You know, maybe we do this poll at the end of the year again. What's the biggest loss for the Buffalo Bills? A couple of more tweets from the tweet sheet. Believe 88. We asked the question, what's the biggest offseason loss for the Bills? Believe 88 says, voted O-line, but I'm going to really miss Preston Brown and hope to see Tyrod play well on his new team. Preston Brown could be missed here, you know, a productive guy, as has been mentioned several times on this show and elsewhere. Not a great fit for what the Bills wanted to do defensively this year and what they want to do moving forward. I think they have a much better fit in the rookie Tremaine Edmonds, but Preston was productive. A lot of tackles, obviously, and had a lot of production, and that'll have to be replaced somewhere. Minicamp Jack tweets in response, what's the biggest offseason loss for the Bills? Minicamp Chat says, all the choices will be felt at least a little, but Wood Incognito were Pro Bowlers and the linchpin of the offensive line. We haven't done much to replace them. A rookie fifth and a few journeyman types. Bodine and Newhouse provide little confidence. At least we have Groy, but I'm nervous. Okay, you can be nervous about that. I think Groy, you're right about Groy. I mean, his tenure at center 2 seasons ago, I think should make people feel fairly confident about what he can do. Bodine played a lot in Cincinnati. We'll see how much he plays here. You know, John Miller, back in the starting lineup at guard. He was a starter for a couple of years. It's not as if they're plugging in someone there who you don't know who they are. So we haven't done much to replace him. I don't know. They signed 2 veterans, Marshall Newhouse and Russell Bodine. Journeyman types, I guess both of them are. I mean, Richie Incognito was a journeyman as well. Vlad Dukas was a journeyman as well. He's a starter. We'll see how it works out. I think those are the two biggest, potentially most significant losses. But I don't think it's a disaster in the making for the Bills on the offensive line. Daryl F29 says it has to be Wood and Incognito because of all units on the field, the O-line is about continuity and cohesiveness more so than any other group. Having to replace 2 starters is a monumental task. Luckily, the Bills have the time to find the right mix of guys. They may have already found them based on what we saw here in the spring, right? OTAs and minicamp. When you look at what they're doing here with Ryan Groy getting most of the first-team reps at center, Dukas shifting over to the other side, and John Miller back in the lineup, they may already have their answers there in the offensive line. Are the answers going to be good enough? That remains to be seen. And one more from the tweet sheet, Brian Cook. He said the question out there on Twitter, the biggest offseason loss for the Bills, Brian Cook says, I may not have voted this way, but I can make the case that the biggest loss was Tyrod. Quarterback is the most important and most difficult spot to fill on the roster. Trading him away shaped everything else we did in free agency and the draft. Well, it certainly did in the draft when it comes to moving up, getting the 7th overall pick and getting Josh Allen. It is the most difficult spot to find a good, great quarterback. I would argue that the Bills did not have a great quarterback in Tyrod Taylor, and they wanted to get better at the quarterback spot, which is why I think that move is absolutely understandable for the Bills. I mean, what do we say with Chris Brown? You knew what you got with Tyrod Taylor. I think we all acknowledge that. And you also knew that what you got from him was not good enough. You could stay with that if you wanted if you wanted to just kind of tread water. But I give the Bills credit for saying, you know what, not good enough. 31st overall passing attack, not good enough. We know what we get from Tyrod Taylor. You're not going to get interceptions. You're going to get, you know, fairly steady play. You're also not going to get a lot of big plays in the passing game. You're going to get a guy who misses open receivers downfield, a guy who is late, I think, somewhat consistently when it comes to finding open receivers downfield. So the Bills, I think, should get some credit for knowing Tyrod Taylor's ceiling, knowing his limitations, and acting to get better at the quarterback spot. That's what they've done. It's an offseason loss, but maybe, you know, short-term loss for a long-term game, I think they would probably want to tell you that that is the case, right? That they're going to be better at quarterback someday. If not right away this year, then someday I think they anticipate that they'll be better. Give us a call. We'll talk about it. The biggest offseason loss for the Bills, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. There are no questions about the Bills at the receiver spot, right? We know that with the departure of some and with what they've done. Kelvin Benjamin looks ready to be the number one, and Sean McDermott talked about him earlier today before practice. McDermott went to, before the media, did a news conference. He talked about Kelvin Benjamin. He says it looks like Kelvin Benjamin is ready to be a big contributor to the Buffalo offense. Here's what the head coach said.
You know, last year he came in and obviously had a challenging back half of the season there, more with the health issues than anything. And I like the way that he's worked this offseason. He's worked through the training room part. He's worked through the strength and conditioning part. He's working with the new system. And really, not comparing him to what we saw in Carolina, but more so Kelvin continuing to be or working to be the best version of himself that he can be on and off the field. And I think that process continues and will continue through the summer. And it's a critical part and point in time for our football team, not just Kelvin, but our entire football team, that they handle this off season, this next phase of it the right way.
Yeah, and that's one of the important issues that McDermott talked about with us when he was sitting here on the set last hour, you know, handling it the right way. I think they like what they've seen from Kelvin Benjamin. They are going to rely on Kelvin Benjamin a lot to be the number one. We talked at length with Chris Brown about this. I think it's a I guess Kelvin Benjamin was the number one receiver at Carolina, too, when he was there. But he's not the prototypical number one. I think he's a different breed of number one receiver, because of his size, because of his red zone ability. I don't think he's slow, but I certainly don't think he's a guy who would scare opposing teams with his ability to, you know, break loose and get deep downfield. But he's got a lot of other things to offer, including the ability to block out, get open, block out, good hands, and be a big target for whoever the quarterback is. So that's important to watch. And the issue about the offseason, McDermott talked about that with us, how important it was for the players to essentially behave, stay out of trouble when they are on their own, not out of the routine, the normal routine they get here at One Bills Drive. And McDermott says they've talked about it and will continue to monitor it throughout the offseason before the Bills go to camp in 6 weeks.
All of our players, there have been plans set forth for this offseason period of time where, there's strength and conditioning plans. There's plans in terms of improving skill. This off season for all of our players, our staff included, is important to reset, to get certain priorities of their lives taken care of. So when we come back to training camp, we're ready to go, and we're further ahead mentally than we were as we leave today or tomorrow, and we're further ahead physically as well as we leave today or tomorrow. So. That's an important, again, I've said before, this is an important period of time for us.
Hey, McDermott brings up a good point, too, about just where they are. And I think it's, you know, I put the question to Lorenzo and to Sean when they were with us on the show. Where are the Bills? It's a milepost here. Look, it's not, mini camp is what it is. You know, it's non-contact, non-padded practices just wrapped up today. 3 mandatory sessions, 10 OTAs before that. Not critical, but at least now that minicamp is over, as of about an hour and a half ago, now you can look at where you're at. That's what got to our Twitter poll about personnel. There's more to it than personnel, obviously. But where are they? Are they further ahead? McDermott was asked that question at his morning news conference today. He said, in general, he likes where the Bills are right now at the end of this minicamp.
You know, we're further ahead this year than we were last year. Still a lot of work to do. But this time is a time for us to hit, like I said, hit the reset button, get some rest for our players, certainly to push back a little bit, but also ramp up the training as we head towards Rochester.
And you kind of heard Lorenzo talk about that, right? I was going to work with his trainer out in Arizona, how he will continue his very strict nutrition regimen over the next 6 weeks. If you're smart, like Lorenzo Alexander and smart NFL players on this roster or any, you don't just go on vacation. You don't just cut loose these next 6 weeks. 6 weeks from today, the Bills will be on the field for their first training camp practice on Thursday, July 26th. We've got some shows coming up between now and then, too, so we'll be talking a lot more about that. Did you see one thing came across my desk today about the Patriots and their OTAs? They had two voluntary organized team activities scheduled for the rest of this week, I think yesterday and today, canceled by Bill Belichick. And Belichick, Tuesday, 2 days ago, basically had a history lesson on the roots of football. ESPN says he wanted to create an environment where players were going back in time. That meant there were leather helmets on the practice field for the Patriots, digital clocks covered up in team meeting rooms, black and white recordings of old football plays, and a lunch menu that resembled what players would eat in the 30s and 40s, burgers, hot dogs, rather than sushi and some of the stuff they get now. One player said it was a lot of fun. That's been lacking in New England, right? Belichick has a connection to history. We know that. He's a fan of football history. The day before that day, Tuesday and Monday, Belichick took the Patriots to Fenway Park. The Patriots used to play in Fenway Park. One player said, the thing I've learned about Coach Belichick is that he loves history, loves the military, and anytime he can incorporate teaching us about that, he loves to do that. It was cool for him to get a chance to talk, to teach us about the sport that we're in, the National Football League, and how it started. Yeah, it's different, right? Belichick did that for the Patriots. Early, of course, he had Kobe Bryant come and speak to the Patriots in OTAs. Bryant watched the team practice, and then the former Los Angeles Lakers superstar came and spoke to the Patriots. Just a little different approach, Belichick and the Patriots. I think that's pretty interesting that he wanted to spend at least one day educating his players on the history of the game. Maybe they're just trying to have more fun. Maybe they're just trying to get more fun after they were accused in several quarters of not being a fun team to be around. Bob Kraft talked about the cancellation of the final two OTAs. Said part of that is there were great things that happened last week, having everyone here, and then they had a team-building activity that was really good. So the owner's on board with it. Very interesting stuff from Bill Belichick. Hey, Bills fans, running fans, you should know this. The Bills are hosting their seventh annual 50-yard finish 5K and kids run coming up just a couple of weeks away, Saturday, June 23rd, right here at New Era Field. 5K portion begins at 9 a.m. that day, Saturday, June 23. A certified course starts on Abbott Road in front of the stadium and finishes in the player tunnel, through the tunnel, onto the 50-yard line. The first 1,200 registrants get a race shirt, souvenir finisher medal, and get a post-race celebration and awards ceremony right on the field there. Spectators are permitted to cheer on the runners, too. It is Saturday, June 23rd. For more information, go to buffalobills.com/50yardfinish. Or call Charlie Canan at PSE Entertainment. The 50-yard finish, seventh annual 50-yard finish. A phone call here, Floyd calling from Rochester. Hi, Floyd, go ahead. You're on the air.
First of all, John, I first want to say it is an honor to be speaking with you, man, for real. I mean,
awfully nice, Floyd.
And Miller, you know, for real. So, yeah, I mean, been a fan since 85. So let me just actually get to the point. First things first, I don't even know why this offensive line question is coming up, especially seeing that we actually picked up two of Virginia Tech's top football players, top offensive lineman, top defensive linebacker. Wyatt Teller is actually the key to this question. It's actually the answer to the question, as well as Deion Dawkins. I really don't know how everybody's forgetting about him. Man was a stud last year. You know, I mean, but as far as that's concerned, yes, we're going to miss Incognito. We're going to miss Wood. But we do have an answer. I mean, it's kind of like the whole entire wide receiver thing. I was sitting there screaming for Dez Bryant to come to Buffalo. Now that I see what I saw in practice, I love what I see. We basically have a good core here now. That's the same thing with our offensive line. We might miss Incognito. We might miss Wood. But we have Teller. And, well, the defense is scary. And as far as Tyrod is concerned, if he wants to sit there and say he wants to beat us in the playoffs, I have a better – on behalf of the Bills Mafia, I'll sit here and say it'll be nice to see him sitting at home watching us play the first or the second round. And on that note, I'll see everybody at Fisher.
All right. Thanks, Floyd. Thanks for calling. Yeah, I didn't mind. Lorenzo's right. I didn't mind Tyrod saying that, what he told NFL Network, that he'd love to play the Bills in the playoffs, love to beat them in the playoffs. He should say that. I think, you know, Tyrod's got his head on straight. That's the right answer. And that's the kind of answer that'll keep him, that in his play will keep him on top of the depth chart there at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns for at least a little while, I would think. But again, you know, Tyrod has played, started one playoff game and put up 3 points. He's, you know, he's not going to scare anybody in the playoffs, right? So I'm glad Tyrod said what he said, but it's not, I don't think it's out of line. It doesn't scare anybody. It shouldn't, that's for sure. We're going to take a break. We got more coming up. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We're presented by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. What do we learn from today's show? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. I'm just thinking during the break, you know, one thing I learned from today's show? I miss Steve during the breaks. It's always fun to talk to Steve Tasker during the breaks. It's good on the show as well, but during the breaks, we have conversations about fun things, non-Bills things. I miss him during the breaks, especially. Steve is on vacation. He'll be back in a couple of weeks or so. We got a lot of vacation. A lot of vacation coming up here over the next couple of weeks. All right, what do we learn? What else do we learn from our guests? Armando Salguero joined us from the Miami Herald. We asked him one of my favorite questions because I don't think a whole lot about Dolphins head coach Adam Gase. So I asked Armando Salguero, what do you think of Adam Gase? Is he anything more than a glorified play caller? Here's what Armando Salguero said.
He knows what his football team must look like. So he has a vision in his head of what he wants to put on the field and how he wants them to play. And he thinks that that is going to work. It's yet to be seen whether he can he's able to put that thing together to where on a Sunday afternoon at Hard Rock Stadium, you see his vision manifesting. But at least he has a clue and a vision of what he wants.
Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald on Adam Gase. We had Buffalo's head coach Sean McDermott in studio with us during the 1 o'clock hour after the final minicamp session. And we asked him for the assessment. How do those three quarterbacks look now as you get ready to take the break before training camp? Here's what Sean McDermott said.
All three young men have worked extremely hard. They're active learners, and they're really excited to grow. And they love to take coaching. They're leaders in their own respective ways. You know, as I've said before, AJ and Nate are working with the ones and twos, and Josh is working with the threes. Josh did work some with the ones this past week. We'll continue to do that periodically through training camp. And we're just going to stick with the plan and adjust it where and when need be. But I've been pleased with the work that they've put into this point.
Stick with the plan. There is a plan. I was trying to tell Tasker that a week ago. There is a plan. It's not, you know, Tasker says the best man wins, and it will be that. But there is a plan, I think, for how they split up the reps over the, well, now in training camp, right, going into training camp. On Twitter, we wanted you to think a little bit about where the Bills are, you know, personnel-wise, roster-wise. End of minicamp today, 6 weeks away from training camp. You know not just who the Bills have lost, because we knew that several months ago, but how they intend on replacing those who they have lost. And so that's what got us to today's Twitter poll, and we had about 1,800 respondents. A question was pretty simple. What was the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills this year? And the answers were pretty overwhelmingly one-sided. The loss of Eric Wood and Richie Incognito, the two of them, we made that one entry. Maybe we should have split those up. Would it be 44-44? Because Wood and Incognito got 88% of the votes for the biggest offseason loss for the Buffalo Bills. 5% said Tyrod Taylor. 5% said Preston Brown. 2% had something else in mind. I guess that's right. You know, you lose those two players, a couple of capable players, and with Eric Wood in particular, you lose a big chunk of leadership. Lorenzo told us how Richie Incognito had his own way of being a leader, which was not inconsiderable. But in each one of those cases, there is an answer. Now, does the answer pan out and answer the Bills' questions? We're going to find out. For Wood and Incognito, you know the drill. It's Ryan Groy getting the reps at center, at least through the end of the minicamp here, with Vlad Dukas moving from right guard to left guard, and John Miller in the lineup at right guard. That's what they have in mind. Is that a drop-off from Wood and Incognito? Maybe to an extent. How much? We'll figure that out as the summer comes up, as training camp comes up. Tyrod Taylor, they have three potential replacements there, and you know who they are. You know what that answer might be. Preston Brown, they have a first-round draft pick to look at now there. So there are losses, but at least you have a better sense now of where the Bills might be headed to fill those losses. Good show coming up tomorrow. Hope you can join us at 12 noon. Production assistants George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Honiter, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Roble. Our producer is Jay Harris. And we will see you tomorrow with One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.